Ladies and gentlemen, hello everybody. Welcome to episode number 77 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast for today, Wednesday, August 18, 2017. And boy, do we got a good, great show for you tonight, guys. We got NXT TakeOver Brooklyn preview predictions. But not only that, no. We got WWE SummerSlam 2017 preview and predictions. The biggest party of the summer this Sunday, SummerSlam weekend, second biggest weekend of the year for WWE. Also, biggest NXT takeover of the year, basically like NXT's WrestleMania taking place Saturday night. We're going to break down and predict the cards for both events. And it's going to be great, guys. So I hope that you guys are going to stick along for the ride with us. We're going to have a lot of fun. And before I get into any of that, though, before we start breaking down NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and SummerSlam, got a little business I want to tend to first. And you guys know how, you know how this goes. How we open the show every single night here. And, that is with the introduction from the two-time TNA Impact Wrestling World Heavyweight Champion, EC3, Ethan Carter III. So, what I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna get the intro ready for Mr. EC3. We're gonna hear from the man himself. And then I'll be back with you to introduce our special guest for the night. And we're going to break down SummerSlam and take over Brooklyn 3 and all that good stuff. So just stay with us, guys. Don't go anywhere. Enjoy EC3. And I will be right back on with you guys in about 15 seconds or so. Enjoy EC3, and I will be right back with you, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go away.
Well, this is EC3 of TNA Wrestling, and you are so very fortunate because you are watching Beyond the Ring with Big T.
Alright, there you go, guys. We just had the privilege of being introduced and hearing from the man himself, EC3, Ethan Carter III. And just want to tell EC3, thank you very much for that wonderful intro, like always. And I'm your host, Big T, right here with you. Before I get into anything else, I just want to let you guys know one thing, and I've been pushing real hard for this on recent episodes of the podcast. And this is something that is very important to me that that you guys need to hear. So I'm going to get into this real quick, and then I promise you wrestling news is coming. But first things first here. All right, the main thing that I want to talk about before we get into the show is my free little family member, Pretty. Her real name was Crystal, but we called her Pretty. And, her life was taken from us way too soon due to careless veterinarian's negligence. Dr. Joseph Dulles of the Pet Hospital of Willoughby in Lake County, Ohio is the one that is, his negligence took the life of my free little family member. Pretty, and it's just devastating. If you go back and listen to episode number 37 of this podcast, the 2016 year in review, I go into everything, you know, what happened with the vet, how she passed away, you know, this and that. So if you want to hear information, more information, please go to that podcast. But I'm really pushing hard here for all pets and for pet lovers and even, you know, and for Pretty herself. I want to make sure that no other pet or furry family member has to suffer the same way that my poor little pretty had to suffer at the hands of a negligent vet. So, I just want you guys to, please get the hashtag justice for pretty moving. Please get the hashtag moving. Get it trending, all over social media. And, please just get it shared around. And, if there's anything I ask of you guys, it's to please help me with that and get that hashtag justice for pretty moving right now. Get it trending all over the internet and all over social media. And speaking of social media, guys, if you want to follow me on social media, you could like me on Facebook, you could follow me on Twitter, you could follow me on Instagram. All right there. I can put the links in the description for you guys too, of the podcast or, you know, all that stuff. Follow me on social media all across all the major platforms. You can check out my website, www.beyondtheringwithbigt.com. And, also on YouTube, you know, make sure if you're just listening to the audio podcast on iTunes, make sure that you go over to my YouTube channel also and show that some love. Make sure you like the videos on there, leave your comments, and subscribe to the channel. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And the same thing goes for the people that know about my YouTube channel but may not be listening to the audio podcast. Everybody on YouTube, go over to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast. It's free. It doesn't cost you nothing. And give it a 5-star rating. It greatly helps out the podcast. So if you guys could do that, that'd be awesome. But don't forget to leave your likes, comments, and hit that subscribe button. Most importantly, follow me all over social media. And yeah, guys, I hope you guys will enjoy this. Sorry for if it was a little bit of an extended opening, but I want to make sure I get everything out there. So I'm your host, Big T, right here along with you. And I got Sage here with us tonight, my buddy Sage. How's it going, bro?
Going on, T?
Hey, I'm excited, man. Biggest party of the summer, SummerSlam weekend coming up. I mean, I know WWE hasn't given us the greatest build, but for some reason, you know, even if WWE does wrong, it's like I still find myself pumped up to see what they're going to do, you know?
Well, it's because it's one of the big four. That's why. And it's a pay-per-view that actually is important. And on top of all of that, it's again, it's one of the some pretty must-see matches on the card. As well as it's in my backyard, in my hometown of New York City. And for those of you who don't know, I will be attending the Raw after SummerSlam. I will be in attendance. Couldn't get tickets to TakeOver. Couldn't get tickets to SummerSlam. But you know what? I couldn't pass up a WWE show in my backyard. So I had to go. And hopefully you guys will be able to spot me. I'm going to try to be visible at least on camera. As T was at his SmackDown show that he was at 2 weeks ago. But yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm excited for TakeOver. I'm excited for SummerSlam. I'm excited for this weekend. I'm excited for these matches. And I'm excited to be there in person as well. I'm just overall excited. And yeah, you're 100% right. It hasn't been the best build at all, but you know what? It's sort of what WWE's been known for in recent years. They've been known to have shitty builds, but then put on pretty decent pay-per-views and even pretty good matches. The only problem is a lot of times the finishes are crap. You know, so was the case for 2015 in Brock versus Taker. In their rematch from WrestleMania 30, which I don't know why the fuck it took over a year for them to face each other, but whatever. So be it. Great match, but then the finish was absolute dog shit.
Yeah. It's just, man, you know, I know I'm not trying to make this sound either, like just to do a little SummerSlam reminiscing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be one of those people where it sounds like nothing can please me besides the Attitude Era. But it's like, I gotta tell you, one of my favorite SummerSlams of all time was the 1998 SummerSlam at MSG in Madison Square Garden. I mean, I'll never forget. You know, really?
All you need on that card. When I think about pay-per-view, the first thing that I think of is that song. I'm on the highway to heaven. And that song right there, I remember it like it was yesterday. The build up to the pay-per-view was amazing, and they kept plugging in that song. I associate that song more with that pay-per-view than I do with American culture. And you know, that song was what was it, AC/DC, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's supposed to be, you know, one of our songs as Americana. And you know, when rock was at its peak, I don't associate that shit with that. I associate it with this pay-per-view. I get it up. Strongest. It was so great.
And you know, don't forget the double main event of that night either. I mean, The Rock versus Triple H for the Intercontinental Championship in a ladder match. And Steve Austin versus The Undertaker for the WWE Championship.
I believe that was the first time they've ever wrestled too.
Actually, The Rock and Triple H, they faced each other before this. They faced
Taker and Austin.
This was actually Taker and Austin's second pay-per-view match. Now, I know where you're getting at, though. This is basically Taker and Austin's first match when Austin really broke through. But they have one forgotten match on pay-per-view that was actually rather good. It was in May of 1997, after Austin and his feud with Bret Hart at WrestleMania 13, he went on to face The Undertaker at In Your House Cold Day in Hell. And that was a rather good match. That was actually the interesting fact too. That was the only pay-per-view match that Austin and The Undertaker had that ended with Austin receiving a tombstone from The Undertaker.
I mean,
because of his future neck problems to follow.
Yeah, after that tombstone that Owen gave him.
Give me a second.
All right, Sage will be right back with us in 1 second here. But yeah, that's just a little bit of SummerSlam history. I mean, 1998 is always that special go-to year that I always look at. You know, it's always that one SummerSlam that sticks out to me. And if I had to pick a second SummerSlam, if someone would really twist my arm and say, what other SummerSlam really sticks out to you? It'd have to be 1997 with The Undertaker and Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels as the referee. Honestly. And the funny thing is about those two SummerSlams, the 97 SummerSlam was in New Jersey. And the 98 SummerSlam was in New York. And, you know, I could go on and on. If someone would ask me my third best SummerSlam, well, it would be SummerSlam 2002 with Triple H and Shawn Michaels and The Rock and Brock. But another interesting story about that SummerSlam, that was in Long Island, New York. It seems like all my favorite SummerSlams took place in New York, New Jersey. That's when they brought out the best And the reason why I'm saying this is because this whole SummerSlam weekend is being highlighted in Brooklyn, New York for the third straight year. And, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal, guys. I'm not going to start breaking down the card until Sage comes back, but, you know, I figured I'd just tell you a little bit about SummerSlam history. I'll keep doing so by saying, you know, SummerSlam is, you're talking your second biggest pay-per-view of the entire year by WWE's, stature. I honestly feel like the Royal Rumble is the second biggest pay-per-view of the year because the Royal Rumble really jump-starts that road to WrestleMania for you. But, you know, another thing that I think of with SummerSlam, just to tell you guys right off the bat, SummerSlam, Intercontinental Championship. That's one of the biggest things in SummerSlam history. The Intercontinental Championship even main evented SummerSlam 1992 in Wembley Stadium with Davey Boy Smith, the British Bulldog, going up against Bret Hart and winning the Intercontinental Championship from Bret Hart. And you go to this year with no Intercontinental Championship on the card. Let that sink in for a second. I mean, no Intercontinental Championship with such a rich history. Like it has. I don't get it, guys. Oh, sorry, just had to take a quick drink of water. I'm really thirsty tonight. It's a hot one. Speaking of SummerSlam, it's a hot one over here where I'm at. Tell you, the heat's getting me. But, yeah, that's just a few SummerSlam facts. I mean, how about this? Not to talk about, well, what's your favorite SummerSlam per se, but what's your favorite SummerSlam moment? What moment defines SummerSlam to you? If someone were to ask me that, what's my favorite moment? Honestly, my favorite moment, and I'll never forget it, I know Sage won't feel the same way, because I know how Sage feels about this man, but for me, my favorite SummerSlam moment is SummerSlam, just moment-wise, Shawn Michaels making his return after being out of the WWE for 4.5 years. And coming back, you know, not only just for us to see him, but for him to have a brutal street fight with Triple H. So, you know, you think about that. Triple H, Shawn Michaels, MDX. It was, what, 5 years in the making at that point. And Shawn Michaels comes back. They build a personal rivalry, have this brutal, bloody street fight. And, you know, that was one moment that I'll never forget. You know, as far as just moments. SummerSlam really does bring a lot, though. When you look into recent SummerSlams, though, if you're really talking about recent SummerSlams, there really hasn't been nothing to make you go, wow. There really hasn't. There really, really hasn't. Let me see. I want to look up a few facts here. I'm going to look up a few facts here for you guys. And, SummerSlam. Let me look at the past events here, because I want to make sure that I get the matches right here. All right, history. Now, if I go to, let's go to say SummerSlam, you know, let's go to 2007, so to speak. Because this is when I remember, you know, SummerSlam, like, yeah, alright, you know, maybe it's lost a little bit, but let's take a look at the match card. Like, you go from all these classic moments that I talk about and all these great matches that I talk about, you know, this SummerSlam really had two of the worst title matches that I've ever seen. I mean, it really has. Let's see. I remember you had, you know, like your undercard matches were MVP and Matt Hardy. You had Beth Phoenix and Michelle McCool for like the women's title. The only match that was of importance at this event was Triple H versus King Booker. And the match wasn't even that great, but what was important about it was, what was important was Triple H was coming back after tearing his quad for the second time. And, you know, he made a return and beat King Booker, but I mean, listen to these title matches. World Heavyweight title match, the Great Khali versus Batista. Who cares? Main event for the WWE Championship, John Cena versus Randy Orton. Honestly, I really don't care about John Cena versus Randy Orton. And then, you know, say go up a few years. Let's go to say just a few short years ago. Let's go to SummerSlam. You know, after CM Punk, post CM Punk SummerSlam. I mean, the pre-show you had RVD defeating Cesaro. Main card, Miz and Dolph Ziggler for the Intercontinental Championship, AJ Lee and Paige for the Divas title, Rusev and Jack Swagger in a flag match, who cares? Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose in a lumberjack match, Chris Jericho and Bray Wyatt, Stephanie McMahon and Brie Bella, which was honestly my favorite match of that whole night, Randy Orton and Roman Reigns. Wow, that's very exciting. And John Cena versus Brock Lesnar in what was the biggest squash match, basically, for a title to ever happen. You know, this is just a few of things of what they've done lately. And, you know, let's go as recent as last year. Let's see what we're working with. We know what we got this year. We're going to break it down. But let's go back to last year to see what they gave us. We had three matches on the pre-show. American Alpha, which is Jason Jordan and Chad Gable against the Hype Bros, Zack Ryder, Mojo Rawley, and the Usos, Jimmy and Jay. Or wait, no, it was the Hype Bros and American Alpha. Then you had the Usos against Breezango, which is Tyler Breeze and Breezango. Then the Ascension, Connor and Victor, and the Vaudeville, and Dean and English, and Simon Gotch. This was a 12-man tag team match. Wow. Jey Uso won the match for his team by pinning Simon Gotch after Samoan Splash. Then Sami Zayn and Neville squared off against the Dudley Boys in a second pre-show match, which, of course, Neville and Zayn got the win. Then Sheamus wrestled Cesaro in the first match of Best of Seven Series, where Sheamus won with a bro kick by pinfall. Then we got Enzo and Kaz facing Jericho and Owens, which Jericho and Owens got the win. Sasha defending her women's title against Charlotte, which ended up with fucking Charlotte retaining, I mean, winning back the title. This was the start of this whole hot potato bullshit. What's up, bro?
Sorry about it, brother. My uncle needed my assistance with television. Yeah. Because both of the he's in his bedroom and in the living room of Sony's. So, yeah, he wanted me to program for him. For,
oh, that's
you know,
okay.
You have the remote that turns on the TV, and then you have the remote for the cable. So he wanted me to like, program for him. So. Anyways, where are we at?
I was just going through some SummerSlam history, explaining my favorite SummerSlams and my favorite SummerSlam moment compared to what they gave us last year, and I'm going through the card right now.
So you want to talk about SummerSlam first or TakeOver first?
TakeOver first, I would say. But to go back to the rest of 2016 SummerSlam, guys, that's when Charlotte and Sasha began the whole hot potato thing for the women's title through the rest of the year. Miz and Apollo Crews for the Intercontinental Championship. Wow, that was a winner. AJ Styles and John Cena in a match where Styles getting the win clean was awesome. The New Day against Anderson and Gallows turned out to be a complete crock because John Stewart fucking got involved and ruined the whole thing. Dean Ambrose defended the WWE World Championship against Dolph Ziggler. Honestly, they tried to build Dolph Ziggler up real fast, and it was basically like Jinder Mahal. Ziggler came out of nowhere, they built him up, put him in a title match. The only difference is where Ziggler would have actually made a good champ, they had him lose where they had Jinder Mahal actually win. And, so we get that. Then we get Becky Lynch, Naomi, and Carmella were scheduled to face Natalya, Alexa Bliss, and Eva Marie in a six-woman tag team match. After Eva Marie was declared absent, Nikki Bella was introduced as her replacement. And, of course, you know what happened. Nikki Bella went on to get the win. Stephanie McMahon, this was probably one of Sage's favorite moments from last year. Stephanie McMahon and Mick Foley unveiled the Universal Championship where everybody's like, that belt sucks. That belt sucks. That belt sucks.
Now, let me speak on that moment. Now, I wasn't present. But I actually did go to the Raw after that SummerSlam as well. But let me speak on that for a little bit. Because half of everybody acting the same way, and half of everybody wanted to shit all over Brooklyn for doing that. Now, let me say something. People who were mad at Brooklyn for doing that. Number one, is what I feel, because of they probably felt that the fans were disrespecting Seth Rollins and Finn Balor in their match, which for what a match it really was, and I understand some people's frustrations of it being hampered because fans who were more focused on the title instead of the match that was actually taking place. Really understandable for you to be upset at the crowd for that reason. I can see both sides. I understand. Yeah, you might have felt that we were a little bit disrespectful, or that we weren't giving the match the attention that it actually deserved, that we were more focused on the belt, and the belt wasn't what's important. What was important was the actual match. That's understandable. However, number one, the thing is, I don't give a fuck what nobody says. Brooklyn is always a great crowd. Any crowd in New York is always a great crowd. But fuck what everybody says. Everybody's on the dick of Chicago and Philly. Oh, Chicago, Philly, they're legendary crowd. But you know what? New York is always a phenomenal crowd. WWE is a company from Stamford, Connecticut, yet they always claimed New York as their territory. Madison Square Garden was always their home. The way I see it, we essentially helped build WWE. We essentially helped build that company. We made that company.
Yeah.
Now, say what you will about New Yorkers. For whatever reason, New Yorkers get the most hate out of everybody. Out of everybody, any part of this country, New York, people hate New Yorkers. For whatever reasons. Cool, whatever. But you can't lie. Anytime they have a Raw, a SmackDown, or any pay-per-view in New York, it always sells out. The crowd is always live. The crowd is never dead. We're never on our hands and on our phones and worrying about milking cows like they do in fucking Corpus Christi, Texas. I hate that fucking crowd. Fuck Corpus Christi.
I'm telling you, man. Green Bay, too. Green Bay, Wisconsin. They call themselves Title Town. They're another winner.
The whole state of Wisconsin sucks. Fuck that whole state. Fucking, and the, what was it? Smoothie King Center? The Smoothie King Center.
In Louisiana. I've been there. The Smoothie King Center, bro.
Fuck off. Nobody gives a fuck about cities and states. Nobody cares. That's why they'll never have a WrestleMania at a fucking... Fuck that place. Whatever you might feel about how we reacted that day, I guarantee you, everybody felt the same way on Twitter, online. They felt that it's not that we weren't booing the match. We weren't booing the competitors and they're busting their ass for us. We weren't booing them. We were booing WWE and their lack of creativity for giving us the same exact fucking belt and just strapping fucking red paint on. How creative is that? And then you want to name it the Universal Champion. So, not only do we get a stupid name, we get a very uncreative design with a shitty-ass, dumb-ass color on it. Rather than keep the belt black and then just put a red background, the same way that they did with the Raw Women's Championship. One has a red background, one has a blue background, but it's still a white belt.
Yeah.
Make them both black, change the background. One has a blue, one has a red. What's so difficult with that? It'll still look good. It'll still look
exactly.
But no. For weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, they tease the new Universal Championship ever since the brand split. But fuck, damn.
And then they unveil it looks like a fucking fruit roll-up or a Cherry Jolly Rancher.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that built-up, right? That built-up, everybody, for weeks, people on Reddit are making mock designs of what they think it's going to look like. People are on fucking on the 2K games making their own fake designs. Oh, I think it'll look like this. It should look like that. Dude, all those... I mean, Finn Balor won the damn title. And I know some of them might say, oh, but it's because he had a bumped shoulder. No. He could have switched his arm and held it up with the other hand. He didn't even fucking hold that shit up. You know why? Because he was afraid he was going to get booed by the fucking fans.
Yeah.
Which is why you see him doing like this, but he has the fucking belt way down here. Hold up the fucking belt if you're proud to hold it up. I bet you if it would have been the IC belt, if it would have been the regular World Heavyweight Championship, he would have held that bitch up. He would have put that shit in his mouth and held it up.
Probably.
Oh, your arm ain't working? Fuck you. Use the other arm. You put it on your mouth. You put it on your shoulder. He held it way down here because he was afraid he was going to get pulled. So, I'm sorry, but everybody criticizing New York, oh, fuck New York, oh, you fucking fans suck. No, fuck you. Fuck you and good night.
Yeah.
We come alive when they come here. We make them money when they come here. all night. Yo, I talked to people that were there the entire weekend when last year when I went. People that went to TakeOver, people that went to SummerSlam, and people that went to that Monday Night Raw. Matter of fact, the guy that was sitting right behind me was talking to me. He was like, yo, nobody in this arena was happy when they unveiled that title. Everybody was booing. Everybody shat all over it. People were fucking, like, even once the show was over, they still kept talking about the belt. The belt was the main topic of the entire fucking night. Even after they left.
It goes to show you that there really wasn't anything on that show. I mean, Balor and Rollins was, you know, the best match like we just spoke of. Then what do you get? Rusev.
That's another thing. If you give us a good show, nobody would have been focusing on the belt. We would have been talking about how great the show was. And guess what? SummerSlam was it. When I'm there, guess what everybody was talking about? Not last year's. Not last year's. But anyways, let's move on.
The last two matches to come out of last year was Rusev and Roman Reigns, which ended in a no contest. And the Brock Lesnar-Randy Orton match when Brock Lesnar beat the living shit out of Randy Orton. And Shane McMahon getting an F5, which literally meant nothing because they never built off of it. And that was SummerSlam 2016. That was it.
The only thing I was really wondering was, is it a work or was it a shoot? There's no way in hell they'll let Brock shoot on fucking Orton and for them to take that long to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it had to be a work. It had to be something that they just let happen.
No, it was. They spoke about it before, and I mean, I've heard it on the podcast that I think Meltzer said that, you know, Brock had learned how to do that when he was training, and he and Orton decided, what did it accomplish? Nothing. It was still a crappy-ass match.
Yeah.
Still a crappy F5. And we never got the F5 into the RKO reversal that everybody predicted was gonna happen. We never got it. So yeah, this horrible match. Shouldn't have main evented. I think this year's main event is definitely making up for last year's. Because last year sucked.
Yeah,
anyways, let's move on. You want to talk about TakeOver? Something good?
Yeah, let's start off with TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and see what we got.
So, for those of you who don't know, Triple H had a conference call recently. And during the conference, I was telling Todd this before we actually went on here, but Hunter was telling us that Brooklyn is NXT's WrestleMania. What do I mean by WrestleMania? Well, number one, you're always going to have the biggest, best matches at Brooklyn. They're trying to have the best card for Brooklyn, number one. And number two, if you guys remember, all the takeovers prior to Brooklyn 1 was always held in Full Sail University. When we finally had TakeOver Brooklyn, that's when they started taking over actual venues, actual arenas. They went from just Full Sail to actual arenas and started traveling. TakeOver Brooklyn to them was like
their big step into big boy shoes, I would say. They went from just being developmental to actually being a brand, a third brand of WWE. And I think they've done phenomenal. But Triple H said himself, this is our WrestleMania. This is when and then everything resets. Just how WrestleMania is. For WrestleMania, all the stories usually end there at WrestleMania. And then we move on. We start off with a clean slate. That's like their beginning of the year for them all over again after WrestleMania. And it's the same thing with TakeOver Brooklyn. Now, this is now the third year that they're in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And man, I am so looking forward to it. I'm so, so looking forward to it. We only have about 5 matches, though. What do you think about that, Todd? We only have like 5 matches for TakeOver, and TakeOver sold out.
That goes to show you how people are invested with the 5 matches that they put on that card.
Absolutely right. There's only 5 matches on this card. I guarantee you, these 5 matches are going to blow anything that SummerSlam and Raw and SmackDown have to offer. I guarantee you. But we're going to kick it off with, from your hometown, Tom, Johnny Gargano, a.k.a. Johnny Wrestling, taking on Andrade Cien Almas, formerly known as La Sombra. I'm reading this off of CBS Sports. This is like the first thing that I had when I searched this. And they have like their own little predictions, and they have like own little summary of the match. And what they wrote was, for this match, it says, a victory for Gargano will be a feel-good moment for NXT fans, but despite his tremendous technical ability, Almas is in the middle of a repackaging and the push for his new valet. It seems like an opportunity to get him a victory over a fan favorite prior to him entering a feud he will ultimately lose. So their prediction is, what do you have and why?
If I had to make a choice, I'd have to say Johnny Gargano. I really think that Johnny Gargano's going to come through. I think, especially since his partner, Tommaso Ciampa, turned on him and had that brutal beatdown of Johnny at the end of TakeOver Chicago. And that left Johnny on the shelf, you know, for a couple months. And Tommaso Ciampa's been on the shelf because of that ankle injury he got, what, the night before TakeOver Chicago? At some NXT house show in fucking Kentucky. Injured his ankle, but somehow went through with the ladder match and went through with the heel turn on Johnny. I really think now Johnny is going to get the win because I think he needs to start getting his ball rolling again. And I think how they're going to book it is, you know, Johnny's going to get on a roll. You know, they're going to be like, oh, you know, Johnny, he's getting wins. It looks like, you know, he got past everything that happened to him, you know, with Ciampa. Next thing you know, it could be a few months down the road yet. And then Ciampa will come back, attack Johnny again. And then it'll be like, here comes Johnny's old demon to haunt him. After he's been on a roll for all this time. So I think Johnny's getting the win.
I gotta say, I agree with something, but I disagree with other things. I have Almas winning by interference by Tommaso Ciampa.
Ah, that's
cool. I think his ankle injury was exaggerated, because if he fucked up his ankle the night before TakeOver Chicago, right?
Yep.
Bullshit Kentucky, of all places. We haven't touched on Kentucky. bumped his fucking ankle in Kentucky, right?
Yep.
Yet he put on the performance that he did the following night at TakeOver. I think maybe they were exaggerating on the ankle injury. Oh, he's going to be out for 7 to 8 months, and blah, 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 blah. They always exaggerate it. You know why? Because they want, when this man returns, for us to fucking pop out of our seats. Right? They don't want us, oh my God, he's back before the timeline. Right? Besides, they never give you an actual time. They always give you an estimated time.
That's true. Like
7 to 8 months. When Cena got injured, right? What was it? With this guy, recently, Revival, right? Then there's 6 to 8 weeks he's supposed to be out.
Yep.
With his injury or whatever. 6 to 8 weeks. It doesn't say, oh, 6 weeks exactly. 8 weeks exactly. 6 to 8 weeks. So that means it could be 4 weeks, it could be 3 weeks, it could be 5 weeks. We don't know. Whenever he gets better. So I think that injury with Ciampa was exaggerated, and I think he'll make his return this Saturday night during his match, or during Johnny Gargano's match against Almas. Distraction by Gargano, I mean distraction by Ciampa. Gargano's gonna get distracted. He ain't gonna know what's going on. Roll up victory or whatever Amos finishes. I don't even know his finish. I think he does a submission. I don't know. I don't watch NXT on a weekly. But I do agree with what CBS says. He is sort of in the middle of a repackaging. He does have a little valet now. I think it's Thea Trinidad is her valet. She's actually Puerto Rican, by the way. So he is in the middle of that, and I think this is good for Amos. I think him having a valet is good. He can actually speak the fucking language, because he can barely speak the language. He needs somebody to talk for him. He can't talk on his own. He needs a manager. And the fact that he actually has a manager in the land of WWE, where barely anybody has a manager anymore, that's pretty good. I'm happy for him. I'm glad he has a manager. And I'm glad she can be his mouthpiece. She can speak for him. Because he needs it. And he's so good in the ring. He's such a good talent. So he definitely needs this. And she's obviously Latino, so she can speak both languages. She can translate for him. She can, you know, be right in the mix of things. And he's a good-looking guy. So you see a guy like that having all the girls, having all the women around him and stuff, right?
Yeah.
I believe this is perfect for him. And Johnny Gargano, a loss for him isn't going to hurt him. He's still Johnny Wrestling. The fans still love him. He's that lovely underdog. He can take it up. Besides, as far as I'm concerned, I don't think Alma has one victory at a takeover. So he needs a W very bad.
Yeah, if he doesn't have one victory coming out of takeover, he definitely does need it. And Thea Trinidad, by the way, she used to be with TNA Impact Wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Know that.
And you know, now she's made her way over, which, I'm sure she's glad to be out of there, because now it transitioned over to Global Force Impact Wrestling, and it's just been a mess.
Yes, man. I'm glad she's out of there, because those people don't know what the fuck they're doing with anybody. You mean? With anybody. But anyway, moving on. We have Aleister Black taking on Hideo Itami. He says here, Black was ready to join the big time when he started in NXT, and he's been a stellar addition to the promotion. While Itami being repackaged as a frustrated heel has been solid, expecting him to take down Black clean as a is a tough task here. Big things are ahead of for Black in NXT. Prediction: Black wins. I believe neither one of these guys can suffer a loss, being as how Black is so hot right now, and he's getting over, and people actually like him. And Hideo Itami is sort of, I guess, a heel now, or a tweener, kind of.
He's actually full-on heel. He turned heel after losing to Bobby Roode at TakeOver Chicago.
He officially turned heel? Because I don't know. I haven't been watching the product, so.
Yeah, he turned heel after that, because after he lost to Bobby Roode, he pretty much went off on the NXT locker room, and then I think that led to Cassius Ohno, you know, turning on one of his buddies in the locker room, Cassius Ohno, you know,
Chris Hero.
Was friends with the day with Tommy.
I'm sorry, I can't.
Yeah, Chris Hero.
I can't call him Cassius Ohno. There's only one KO in WWE, and that's Kevin Owens. His name is Chris Hero. So, sorry, I was going to call him Ohno. So they're sort of in a place where nobody could really lose. But that being said, I'm still going to go with Black. I think he's too hot right now. He's getting too over. And if McIntyre can't beat Rude, that's next in line right there for the NXT Championship right there. Black.
So. Yeah, honestly, I'm telling you. I saw Aleister Black live when he debuted on the NXT roster the few days after WrestleMania 33. The response he got right off the bat with that character, well, actually, he debuted on TakeOver Orlando, that's right. And then he went forward, you know, after that. But I'll tell you, he's awesome. He's got the perfect character. He's got a great look. He's got the right entrance. He's one of the hottest commodities, not only in NXT, but in the entire WWE right now. And I don't think he has suffered one loss yet. I think he's still undefeated, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not 100% sure, so don't quote me on that, people, because I have not seen every single NXT episode. You know, same as Sage. So I haven't heard anything about him losing matches yet, but I think he's still undefeated on NXT. And considering how his stock is rising. And you know the thing is with Black, I don't think he's a heel. I don't think he's a heel. I don't think he's a face. I think Aleister Black is just a tweener. He's just himself, you know. Either you're going to love him or you're going to hate him.
There's no way he could be a full-on face or a full-on heel. He can't be a full-on heel because he gets so much cheers and love. He can't be so much of a face either because I don't know if any of you know this, but he actually believes in the occult and black magic and Satanism and that type of shit. So, guy like that, you can't have a guy like that being the face of your brand. I'm sorry. I like Black, but I don't think they're gonna put a guy who wears fucking upside down pentagrams and shit all on their brand. You know?
No, you're right. But I mean, without a doubt, man, Aleister Black's beating Itami, even though neither one could suffer a loss. Aleister Black's beating Itami because I don't see them giving a win to Itami over Black. I just don't.
Yeah. I mean, and if the rumors that I've heard were true a couple of months ago, Itami being frustrated in his position and where he is in NXT, all of that, this whole heel turn that Itami's going through, it's based on his legit real life feeling that, you know, everybody, all his classmates have gone on to bigger and better things. They're all on the main roster now. He could have been on the main roster. He could have been NXT champion and been on the main roster by now, but you know, the injuries have plagued him and have hindered him from being, you know, propelled to that next level, and he's sort of been stagnant, so this heel turn is justified. But if the rumors that I heard were true, and him being unhappy being there in NXT, he was gonna, whenever his contract was up, he was gonna go to back to Japan. So.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Oh, sorry, I'm just writing somebody. Moving on, we have the NXT Tag Team Champions, the Authors of Pain, defending said tag titles against Sanity. It says here, it would make sense for AOP to continue their reign of domination of NXT, particularly since the promotion is void of strong tag teams right now. But WWE is badly in need of a pair like these guys. Sanity also needs a push now that Eric Young has returned, and this would be a good opportunity to change the straps and allow both teams to move forward. Prediction, Sanity wins the title. I completely have to disagree. I don't think AOP is losing those titles anytime soon. I don't think AOP is ready to move up to the main roster, because usually, yeah, once they start dropping titles, it means any day now, they'll be up to the main roster. I don't see AOP going up to the main anytime soon. Just like I don't see Sanity going up anytime soon. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, they're still too green. But AOP is, at least. Not so much Sanity, because Sanity has Eric Young, Sanity has Dillian Kane, you know, and Nikki Cross. Those guys, they don't need any developing. They're good at this. Maybe Wolf needs a little bit more time. But Big Damo, he's good. Eric Young, he's good. Cross, she's good. So.
Yeah, I mean, when you take a look at it, Authors of Pain have just been way too dominant. Honestly, I look at the Authors of Pain right now more dominant than the Ascension even was in NXT. Like, the Ascension was the first real dominant tag team in NXT. And I see a continuation of that, you know, with the Authors of Pain. And I agree, WWE does need tag teams, but you can't, you know, just because the Authors of Pain are lighting up NXT's tag division right now, you can't sacrifice their development and the future of those two men just for the sake of, we need tag teams on the main roster because we fucked up and broke up every good tag team that we had on the main roster. So I hope to God they don't do that to Authors of Pain, and I don't think they will, because Authors of Pain, you know, they're a special team. And they're managed by Paul Ellering, a Hall of Fame manager. I mean, Paul Ellering is, you know, probably one of the top tag team general managers of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And to have this guy, you know, having Paul Ellering giving these guys Authors of Pain knowledge and, you know, all that stuff, I think they gotta stay in NXT as well. And defend their titles against all the other teams. Let them go through the whole roster to where there are no more that they could beat. Then maybe bring up a new team that can challenge them, and then at that time have that team beat them. But it's not time yet. Authors of Pain are not ready for the main roster yet. Maybe around beginning of 2018 I could see it, but
mm-hmm. I'm
predicting Authors of Pain to walk away with the titles as well. And it's like another thing, when I look at Sanity, I could see Sanity being one of those big teams to even go up to the main roster without ever winning the tag titles. You know, you don't need to win gold in NXT to be promoted.
The gimmick is good. The gimmick is good, yeah.
Yeah. They could go on the main roster and get
besides,
over.
Let's see.
What was that, bro? You were breaking up. Oh, Sanity.
You hear me?
Yeah. Are you there? Let's see. I was able to hear Sage just a second. And then... I see his picture. I'm able to hear you a little bit, bro. I don't know why.
You hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. It froze on my side. I don't know.
Yeah, I noticed that it was freezing on your side. That was weird.
But anyways, Wyatt family, Rowan, Wolf, I mean, Eric Young, Big Damon, and Wolf taking on Wyatt, Rowan, Harper. I would love to see that.
Oh, that would be a great match. That would be great. I'd be invested in that too. But definitely, man, Authors of Pain, NXT Tag Champs, no doubt about it. They retain.
It's moving on. We have Vince Champion Oscar defending that championship against Ember. It says here, Oscar's the best wrestler in NXT, a tremendous Vince Champion for the brand. Unlike Ruth, it seems like WWE could call her up at any time. But even though if they do, it may be with her still holding the women's title. While Moon's talented, I'm not sure she's ready to carry a thin division. Prediction, Oscar retains the title. Now, I'll let you talk first, then I'll talk about this.
Okay. Well, I'm going to tell you guys right off the bat. I like Ember Moon. I do. But, Ember Moon doesn't need to win the NXT Women's Championship to go onto the main roster. I feel that Ember Moon could go on as is. She don't need a women's title put on her necessarily. Now, I'm going with Asuka to retain the NXT Women's title, and why? Why am I doing that? Why am I doing that considering it seems like the odds are so heavily in Ember Moon's favor? Because, you know, this is her second time going for it. She's going to get redemption, blah, blah, blah. I don't think so. The reason why... You have the Mae Young Classic with all these women that are competing. And I believe we already covered this. The winner of the Mae Young Classic goes on to challenge the NXT Women's Champion. Now, if you're going to be smart for business and not be entirely fucking stupid, if you're going to use your head and have business sense, that business sense will tell you all you're investing in this women's tournament in the Mae Young Classic, whatever woman wins this event, which I believe it'll be that one woman from Japan. I can't remember her name.
Hiri Sane, Hiri Ojo.
What is it, bro?
Her name in Japan is Hiri Ojo. In WWE is Hiri Sane.
Okay. So... Kairi Sane is her name in WWE, and I believe she's the one that's going to win the Mae Young Classic.
Yeah.
She's going to do it.
Beat well.
Exactly. That's where I'm going, because if you're going to have Kairi Sane win the Mae Young Classic, having her beat Ember Moon would not do nearly as much for her, because Asuka would already be beaten and gone. Asuka has this streak built up for a reason. She is undefeated. She's held the title for over 500 days. Triple H, it seems like he has the business sense and more of the wherewithal on how to book logically. So that's why I'm saying. To book smart, Asuka's gotta win. Hold the title on her maybe to the end of the year. Kairi Sane wins the Mae Young Classic. You put her against Asuka. Kairi Sane's your new champ. Asuka goes to the main roster. That's it. Simple as that. And Kairi Sane, the woman that wins the Mae Young Classic, you won't even have to wonder about her because she will already be made. She will already be a superstar by defeating Asuka because of how high Asuka's undefeated streak is already. Now, she'll be a bona fide star.
Here's the thing about the Mae Young Classic. Now, I don't know how true it is. We'll have to wait and see. But if the rumors are true, and the rumor being that the Mae Young Classic Finals is going to be, it's not going to be taped, it's going to be live.
Okay.
The rumors is also that not only is it going to be taped, I mean, not only is it going to be live, but it's going to be live on, like, a Monday Night Raw. Now, that's true. This is the way that they're doing it. This is going to be an epic failure. If they're going to do live and not tape, it needs to be in the same Wholesale University venue that the entire tournament took place, just like the Cruiserweight class. Don't start doing experimentations like 205 Live, because we all see how far that's come. We all see how far 205 Live's come. Not very far. What you need to do is film it in front of the Wholesale University crowd. These people understand the business. These people are actual hardcore fans. These people get the characters, they get the gimmicks, they've seen these women before, they're not casual fans, they're hardcore fans just like you and I and anybody you watch. Because they get it. You put this shit in front of Billy Joe Bob and fucking Sarah and fucking Michelle. You put it in front of those people, what the fuck you think they gonna do?
They're not even gonna know who the fuck the women are.
Where the fuck's Triple H? Where the fuck's The Undertaker? That's what I came to see. No. No. You get me? No.
Yeah.
They don't understand. They don't get these people that are busting their fucking asses just because they're not in America and they're across the fucking world overseas. Doesn't make them any less talented. Doesn't mean anything. That's why I hate when I get on YouTube and I see comments of, oh, well, this vanilla midget, he's never gonna be anything. And you see that same motherfucker as soon as he makes it to WWE. Oh, he's great. Oh, I like him. So just because he wasn't in WWE, you didn't like him, you weren't a fan. But the minute he comes, you see how good he really is, and then you start fucking kissing his ass. Okay. Many people like that. People have this stigma that, oh, well, WWE, it makes you better. No, it doesn't. WWE actually hinders you. WWE puts shackles on you, puts handcuffs on you. You can't say whatever you want, act however you want. You can't do whatever you want. You don't have a say in what music you get. You don't have a say in what you wear. They have a say. You can't even call a belt a belt. You gotta call it a championship title or whatever. You can't say, I want a shot at your title. You can't say the word shot because they think you're talking about this shot rather than I want an opportunity to face you. So you literally need a fucking thesaurus if you're gonna be working in WWE. so you know exactly what to say.
Nope.
I don't know if you ever saw this video that came out. It was Michael Cole was, it was the audio that got me. It was, Michael on the Raw with his headset. And they have one, I guess the commercial or whatever. So they were on break. So Michael was talking back to whoever was in his headset, which is presumably Vince, right? And Michael's talking to him, and you hear him say, "Well, you want me to say it again? I said it already 4 or 5 times already. What are you? Then all of a sudden you hear him go quiet. Yes, sir. Okay, sir. Okay. And then it cuts off. You ever heard that, Todd?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you ever hear that audio?
I didn't. Yep.
That's the saddest audio I've ever heard from Michael Cole, bro. Because you know Vince McMahon chewed his ass out. You know Vince chewed his ass out, bro. You know he can't say how he feels or what he wants.
Oh, no way, man. No. There's no way he could. Yeah, but yeah, it was sad then, but that's how I feel what's gonna happen in the match. What's your prediction on the women's title? You hear me, bro?
Yep, the next matchup is the main event.
Oh, you didn't give your thoughts on the women's title yet.
Oh, well, no. I mean, you said everything that I was going to plan on saying. I mean, you legit said everything. You have my thoughts exactly. I mean, I absolutely believe that Asuka's going to face whoever wins the Mae Young Classic, and I believe that's going to be Kairi Sane. Could be wrong. Might be somebody completely different. But I believe it's going to be Kairi Sane. Could be completely wrong. It might be another woman. But whoever wins the Mae Young Classic, I see challenging for the NXT Women's Challenge. Simple as that.
Fair enough.
So, I mean, I don't see anybody else who's capable of believably winning. But it could very well be Kairi. I mean, the reception that she got when she came out, when they were doing the announcements. Jesus Christ. Right, it was absolutely great, bro. It was so great. Did you end up seeing that or not?
Which one, man? Oh, the matches for the Mae Young Classic?
No, they haven't released any matches yet.
Oh, that's right. They just released the women that are going to be in it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about when they announced them.
Yeah, I saw part of it. I didn't get all the way through it yet, but I started watching it. Remember when we went over it on the one show?
Mm-hmm.
I started getting into that.
Well, if you watch the entire thing, Kairi's like, she's last one, or the one before last, that they call, and the crowd collectively lost their shit when they said she's gonna be a big deal. I mean, they only literally popped for like 5 girls. So, those are the 5 that I see going pretty far in the tournament.
Let's hope it holds true, man.
But anyways, that being said, there's only one match left. And that, of course, is the main event of the evening, that being the NXT champion defending his title against Drew McIntyre. Now, it says here, though Roderick Strong is lurking for a showdown with Drew, there will be McIntyre getting the opportunity here as he looks to save NXT from Drew's takeover of the brand. It would be a bit of a surprise to see McIntyre win the title in his first opportunity, and it does not seem like WWE has plans to bring Rude up to the main roster at this time. So their prediction, Rude retains the title. Go ahead, Todd, what do you think?
I honestly think what's going to happen here is, I know a lot of people are probably thinking, you know, collectively, like, oh, you know, Drew McIntyre's going to win. Drew McIntyre's going to win. I mean, you know, don't get discouraged, people. Drew McIntyre is definitely going to win, but I don't think it's going to be on the first shot. If they would do it on the first shot, I would be surprised. What I see happening, though, is Bobby Roode using some kind of heel shortcut. Whether or not he grabs the tights, or maybe he pins Drew McIntyre and Drew McIntyre's foot's on the rope and the referee doesn't see it and counts the fall. Something's going to happen to that extent where Drew McIntyre deserves a rematch. Whatever happens will happen, but something's going to happen to kind of make it inconclusive to where Drew McIntyre could go to William Regal and say, hey, this happened. I want my rematch. And then in the next takeover, which will be on Survivor Series weekend, that's when I see McIntyre finally going over and defeating Roode. Then that'll lead into January, the takeover before the Rumble. Roode McIntyre in a rematch with McIntyre's champ. Roode will lose. That'll be his exit from NXT. Then on the next night be a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble, and there's Roode on the main roster. So with that storyline that I just laid out for you guys, Bobby Roode is winning this match tomorrow night, I mean on Saturday night, and retaining the NXT World Heavyweight Championship.
I agree with him retaining the championship. I don't think he's going to come out of the Royal Rumble, though. I mean, that's your opinion. I don't see him coming out of the Royal Rumble. I see him... I mean, dude, his theme song and his entrance alone, he needs a spotlight on him. Him debuting in the Royal Rumble, it's not going to put the spotlight on him. He's going to be there, but then the spotlight is going to be on the other people who are going to come out next. And people waiting to see who's the next guy. Rude, it has that type of gimmick, that type of character, that spotlight has to be on. He's very Ric Flair-esque in this character. He talks about his money, he's very braggadocious, he has the fucking the similar robes with all the fucking rhinestones on it. Like, same type of character. So I don't see him having that Royal Rumble moment. But that's just me. But yeah, Bobby Roode is most definitely going to retain that championship. I highly doubt he's going to lose. I mean, McIntyre is going to win in his first opportunity. They don't usually do that. What NXT usually does is make this either two matches, or they usually make it a trilogy. And I don't see this being a trilogy. I don't think McIntyre is that strong of a character at this point. I don't see McIntyre as their champion yet. Maybe in the future. Not right now at this moment. Not right now at this moment. However, what I could see happening, I could see Roderick Strong sticking his nose in this match, sticking it in this business, being as how I believe at last night's NXT, what was it, Roderick Strong? Didn't he lay out McIntyre and Rude? Something like that?
I think it was something like that along those lines. It sounds about right.
I think that's what happened. I think either Strong stuck his nose in their business, Rude laid out Strong for sticking his nose in his business with McIntyre. So, regardless, eventually this will probably become a three-way dance. They'll probably do it on NXT taping. But I think that Strong might stick his nose in this match. It might cost these guys, or might cost McIntyre his shot at this. So that's exactly what I see going down. Will McIntyre be champion? Yeah, maybe in the future. I don't see him being champion.
Exactly. I feel the same way. I don't see him being champion right now, but in the future, I think without a doubt he will be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he has champion written all over him. He has the look that WWE likes. He's big. He's fucking muscles on top of muscles. You know, he has, you know, he's a good looking guy. You know, he has a decent moveset. You know, he's a guy who already knows the WWE system because he's been there before. So he has all the tools of future world champion. Now, whether that's in NXT or whether that's in WWE, that's to be seen, but there's no way now they can have him, McIntyre, go where he went during this first run. This man has to be a champion and has to be taken serious.
Exactly, bro. You hit the nail on the head. Now, with this putting an end to the NXT coverage, you know how I like to do a little bit of a guessing game on what we think.
Wait a minute. Sorry to cut you off. But it was McIntyre versus Strong last night. And Rude came out and laid them both out. So.
Okay.
That's what happened last night's show. So.
Thanks for adding that.
Mm-hmm.
But in
you were saying?
In the grand scheme of things, you know what I like to do. Since this gives our thoughts on NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, we only have one more thought to give, and that is, what kind of show do you expect NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3 to be? What is your prediction rating for the show?
What do you mean for that? What kind of show do I see it being?
What do you predict the show's going to be on a scale of 1 to 10 and then see if it lives up to your expectation?
Oh, easily an 8.5 to a 10. I see it. 8.5, 8 being the minimum. I see it being at least a 8.5 to 10 show. That's what I see. 8 being the minimum, but it would most likely be somewhere along the lines of a 9 show.
Yeah, and that's how
takeovers are. They never disappoint. I mean, I wasn't at Chicago. I wasn't like. That's a pay-per-view that sort of came out of the blue, because it's not like we had a long weekend that weekend.
And it was just for Backlash. It wasn't even for a big pay-per-view.
Yeah, exactly. And but even then, that was the best pay-per-view of the entire. I mean, that was the best. Yeah, it was the best pay-per-view that weekend. Next to Backlash. I mean, Backlash. There was no way in hell that shit held a candle to it. The only talking point about Backlash is Jinder Mahal became champion. But it's not like anybody cared about Jinder. So.
But you definitely like how you told me with the women's match how you I pretty much took the words out of your mouth with the ratings. You pretty much took the words out of my mouth. I mean, 8 definitely the minimum. I don't see anything below 8, but this could definitely escalate, you know, all the way up from 8, 9, you know, even 10. It could. It very well could. And expect a very good show. Come Saturday night in the Barclays.
Honestly, I'm always going to be a little bit biased to shows here in New York, being as I'm from New York, obviously, and because New York is always just lost the crowd, so you know this show it already has points because it's a takeover Brooklyn show. And like I mentioned earlier, Triple H himself said, is their WrestleMania. So the fact that this show means that much to Triple H and to the NXT brand, it already gonna be doing good. It already has high points. And it's already gonna have good points on my scale. Just for that. Just for that.
Definitely.
It's in New York. So it already has good grades for me. Already see it being good.
Yep, definitely. And you know, I know how you feel because I feel the same way about wrestling shows in Cleveland, Ohio. It seems like they put together some good ones when they come here, and you know, I always have that little hometown soft spot when they come here.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, but aside from that, I mean, it's a great car. It's a great car. Simple as that.
Yeah.
It's a good car. And these are matches that I actually care to see.
So, oh, it's something to definitely sink your teeth into.
That on top of everything else that I mentioned, I mean, I can't help but expect a good show. Now, of course, I'm a person who's upfront and blunt and honest, and if it's not a great show, I'll get on there and say, hey, it's not a great show. Wasn't a great show, I'll get on there and I'll say it. I'm not just going to fucking blindly go and give it a good grade just because it's here. No, I'll be straight up honest with you. It's good, it's good. If it's bad, it's bad. And I'll call them out on their bullshit.
Exactly. I'm the same exact way. And you know what? That's how you gotta be. That's the only way to be.
But anyways, how about you? What do you see this show being a 9, a 10, what?
I'm gonna go anywhere between, I'm gonna say between 9 and 10. I mean, you know, TakeOver Brooklyn has definitely flowed smoothly, especially the first one with Sasha and Bayley, which was my favorite match, even over Owens and Balor. And that was a great match. I mean, that definitely was a 10 show. So I'm going to say this has all the capabilities, and I'm going to hold out hope that it's going to be the best show of the weekend and bring in the best and be perfect. I'm going to say 10. That's what I'm predicting, at least. Can it be lower? Yeah, but I'm holding out for that 10 show.
Man, don't get me wrong. I love NXT, but I don't see them being a 10 show. I don't see time under WWE. They have all the capabilities of doing it, but I highly doubt that they will. I don't see it happening at all. I don't see them ever making a 10 show.
And I mean, you know, you very well could be right. I mean, this card has the whole recipe to be a 10 show. But, you know, even with NXT, will they book it correctly enough to be that 10 show? We will see.
Because the complaint is always, why can't they do what they do on NXT, on Raw and SmackDown? That's always what the complaint boils down to. If they can take everything that they do on NXT into everything that they do on the main roster, guess what? You won't have us shitting on the show every week. You won't have
exactly.
Us complaining. You won't have us arguing and bitching and moaning. If you apply what they do on NXT and put it on Raw and SmackDown and put it on their pay-per-views, they won't complain. Pay-per-views. We don't get an NXT pay-per-view every month. We get them quarterly. Every quarter, every 3 months, without one. We get them, they're like seasonal. They're like every season. We get them.
That's true.
But guess what? They don't need one every month. They don't need one every 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Like they are now with the brand split.
You're right. That's 100%.
NXT's TV taking to get through. It's not like they don't. They gotta get through. They try. It's like WWE does. They do what it does. Except they don't fucking give us bullshit ass storylines or fucking dog suits or stupid ass suits like The Miz. Was it a dog suit? What was it? A bunny suit? What was it? Some stupid suit.
A fucking teddy bear costume.
Don't see no teddy bear costumes on NXT. Don't see no stupid storylines like that. Of our ball on it, huh?
God, yeah. Like that.
You understand? Now, if NXT did that, guess what? I'd shit all over NXT. But they don't. They give me what we want in the end. Simple storylines. Rest storylines that make sense. Storylines that make sense. William Regal. Right now, William Regal is the best GM on all brands. The best GM. Why haven't they had to replace him 3 or 4 times? But they have to replace McFoley, huh? They have to replace Stephanie. Now with Kurt Angle. There's no illegitimate children storylines on NXT. And I mean, they very well could with fucking William Regal and fucking Pete Dunne.
Yeah.
If you look at the similarities between those two, it's fucking uncanny. But it actually make more sense than Jason Jordan and Kurt Angle. You understand?
Yeah.
But NXT doesn't. Because they know what us hardcore fans want. Simple storylines. Great talent. Having great wrestling matches. Great storytelling in the ring. That's all we want. All we want.
That's all we ever asked for.
That's all we asked for. Anyways, moving on to the WWE SummerSlam 2017 predictions. Now, this match was just announced, I believe, earlier today. And being as how the Revival is injured and can't take on the Hardys, WWE decided, hey, why not have the Miztourage take on Jason Jordan and the Hardy Boys? The 3-on-3 tag team match on the kickoff show. It says here, added on Thursday, this match is a very good way. This is what CBS did, not my words. Added on Thursday, this match is a very good way to get these guys on the show and provide some additional entertainment as fans are filing in. At this point, it's worth showing up and starting to watch at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, as you will get two title matches and the Intercontinental Champion in a match with one of the best tag teams in WWE history. Pick Orton and the Hardy Boys. Honestly, I don't care about none of these storylines. I just care about the Hardy Boys. And I just want to see them fucking delete somebody. I just want to hear Brooklyn Champ delete. Sucks that we're going to get this off, though. Because the Hardys need to be on the main show. Why are they on the show? That's one thing that very much upsets me. The Hardy Boys need to have their moment. Everybody else gets their moment. Why can't the Hardys?
I agree. Who do you think's gonna win?
Well, they picked Jordan and the Hardys, and I gotta say, I agree, man. I don't see the Hardy Boys losing, especially not in Brooklyn. Brooklyn will flip their shit if they lose to the Miz Charles. Both Dallas and Curtis Axel. Come on, man.
Honestly, I gotta tell you, it's depressing. You know that the Hardys are gonna be in a kickoff match. It really is. To see where they were at WrestleMania, to see now second biggest pay-per-view of the year being relegated in a kickoff match. And it really goes to show you too, how important the Intercontinental Championship is to them and how important the Miz is, that they don't give a fuck, that they even put one of the most prestigious things about SummerSlam, which is an Intercontinental Championship matchup, putting that on the pre-show. I mean, that is just criminal when you think about it, but that is how they have just killed the stock of the Intercontinental Championship and nosedived it right into the ground. So, I mean, really, I'm more concerned for the Intercontinental Championship than the Hardys, because the only reason why the Hardys are on the pre-show and in this position is because the Revival got hurt and they got nothing to do. And, you know, in the end, the Hardys and Jordan are taking this thing. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if the Miztourage were to beat the Hardys and Jordan, good God, bro. I mean, that's just... I don't even want to think about it.
Yep. That says here, moving on, still on the kickoff show. We're going to get a rematch from this Monday. We're going to have the newly crowned Cruiserweight champion, Akira Tozawa, defend his newly won championship against the former champion, Neville. As says here, Tozawa's victory on Raw providing a nice surprise moment during Monday's go-home episode of Raw. But this means Neville's division and the King of the Cruiserweight is still operating at a level above everyone else. Tozawa has looked good in his weeks, and this feud has done well to legitimize him. But there are more talented 205-pound performers who better deserve to be the long-term successor. Pick Neville wins the title. Now somebody else wrote, these are like two writers on CBS, I guess.
Okay.
The other guy writes, the rise of Tozawa has been impressive. WWE fans are buying in. Neville is so versatile and obviously ready for a return to the main roster. It's a shame that cruiserweights are relegated to only fighting those weighing 205 pounds or less, because he really should have a hybrid role. It's time for the division to move on with fresh blood. Pick Cesaro retains the title. What do you think, Tom?
Well, you know, I just thought about it as you were reading it too. Neville has done everything he can do in the cruiserweight division. He really has. I mean, you keep a guy like Neville in the cruiserweight division, you are just wasting his talent week by week, month by month. Because what else is he going to do? Win the cruiserweight title back, then what? Then what is he going to do? Fight the same guys all over again and dominate? No, you know what? I think he's done good enough work on this heel run to deserve a shot at the main roster and to get out of this, because he is really done great work. I think Neville's going to the main roster, or around SmackDown, I should say, out of the Cruiserweight division. And since I was retaining and keeping the Cruiserweight title.
Now the last thing that I want is for them to be hot potatoing another championship. Because God knows WWE loves hot potatoing titles for whatever reason. Last thing that we need is for them to start hot potatoing the Cruiserweight championship. However, at this point in the game, the Cruiserweight title means absolutely nothing. The Cruiserweight title is absolutely meaningless because the entire division is meaningless. When you put all your eggs in one basket and just rely on one guy in your entire division rather than building up individuals, obviously the division isn't going to mean anything. Henceforth, the title doesn't mean anything. Which is why I don't care for the Cruiserweights. I don't care for the title. I don't care for the champion. I don't care for anything about it besides Neville. Neville was the only guy they've taken their time to actually build. Yeah, I like Tozawa. Yeah, Tozawa's over. I've liked Tozawa since the Cruiserweight classic. I liked Tozawa even before the classic when he was in fucking Dragon Gate. I've seen some of his matches. He's always been great. But that's it. They don't build anyone else. Noam Dar is a phenomenal talent. Gate into. He had the one great debut when he came up in Scotland. After that, nothing. You can relegate into fucking Alicia Fox. That's it. That's his gimmick. He's a Scottish kid with a thick Scottish accent who pronounces things funny with his accent. That's it. And he dated Alicia Fox. This is his gimmick. Stupid. Horrible. Yeah, when he was in the UK, when he was in WCPW, when he was in ICW, he was taken so fucking serious. They were recently in Europe, like a week or two ago. WWE was touring over there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Allow Noam Dar to go to ICW. This man went to ICW, bro. I saw the video. The reception, the reaction that this man got when he came out, entrance that he got, they received him like he was a superstar. They popped for him because ICW is obviously a Scottish promotion, but regardless, whether it's in Scotland, whether it's in Australia, whether it's in Japan, no matter where it is. It means nothing. What matters is how that talent is booked. And how he's been booked in WWE has been laughable. Now, I'm just talking about Noam Dar. I'm not even talking about the main guys. Which Neville. Neville's the only guy who's been built up. Personally, I only saw one person dethroning Neville. That person was Cedric Alexander. Why they chose Sakura and not Alexander, it's beyond me. But Alexander just came back from a shoulder or elbow injury or surgery or whatever. Just came back a couple weeks ago. He's fresh. He's a great baby face. He's very talented. I don't see why they aren't utilizing him. I don't see why they didn't use him. Look, because he doesn't have a fucking catchphrase like Cesaro does. The fact that Cesaro was getting over while associating with Titus O'Neil, Cesaro doesn't mean the Titus brand or Titus Worldwide. Titus Worldwide means Cesaro. Otherwise, Titus Worldwide isn't in the conversation. Now, here's what I see happening. Either Neville could win the title back. He could win it back. Have one more match with Cesaro at the following pay-per-view. Have Neville retain and Cesaro lose. And eventually, Cesaro leave Titus Worldwide, whatever, and Neville can hold it until Cedric Alexander is ready, and then Cedric Alexander beats him. Which is why I expect Alexander to beat him. Or you can have Neville lose and have Cesaro retain. Neville can move on to the regular roster, which even if they do move him up, I don't see what they'll do with him. They'll probably fucking team him up with somebody. Put him in the tag team division. I don't know. Because he's not going to be facing for the world title anytime soon. He'll either be in the tag division. I don't see him being IC champion. I just don't. Besides, The Miz is the champion right now. Miz is a heel, and Neville is a heel, so that wouldn't work. However, whatever you do with Neville, if Cesaro retains, I see Apollo Crews turning on Cesaro. I think I spoke to you about this on Monday. I don't know if it was Monday or maybe it was last week. But I see Apollo Crews, how at the end of Cesaro's match, they come out. Titus comes out and they all take a selfie. But I see them doing that with Apollo Crews, and every week, the expression on Apollo Crews' face starts changing. Now, first he's happy, and the next week, smiling, but not showing teeth. And next week, he's not smiling at all. And every time, he's looking at Cesaro. He's just not happy. He's grilling him, staring at him. And they do the back segments, and, Apollo Crews, he start getting jealous. Titus is only focusing on Cesaro, and only showing love to Cesaro. He's not doing anything with Crews. He hasn't been getting Crews' book. He hasn't been getting Crews the push that he wants, that he's looking for. He's just focusing on Cesaro. Cesaro is his fucking primary talent. Crews is secondary. Crews is gonna get mad. Because Crews was part of Titus Worldwide before Cesaro came into the picture.
Yep.
So I see them having some beef. I see them getting to scuffle and eventually cruise. I'll be challenged to Zal for the title. Nothing, little by little, WWE's gonna get away. Gonna start moving away from that 205 live rule, from the 205 weight class rule. I think they'll start having guys with different weight class start challenging for that title.
Do you think that's they might turn it into something like how TNA had with the X Division? Like, you know, if you could fly through the air, if you were good athletically, it wasn't just for the small guys. Like, if big guys could move athletically, like, look at Joe, he was X Division champ. I remember when he was doing dives off the top rope and over the top rope and shit. Joe was doing some crazy shit in the X Division.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's just my little theory. I see Apollo Crews turning heel on Sal.
I think that could happen.
Anyways, what do you think with the whole Tozawa and Melvin stuff?
I think in the end, Tozawa's gonna end up retaining. Neville's gonna move on. And then the Apollo Crews heel turn. I think it's either gonna happen at SummerSlam or perhaps even the night after SummerSlam on Raw. If Titus is having another celebration with Tozawa in the ring, you know, like he beat Neville again, it could even happen the night after on Raw. But Tozawa definitely see him retaining.
Now, moving on, and this is probably the biggest match that I see it's going to be on the kickoff show. Match. The SmackDown Tag Team Championship match with the New Day defending their titles against the Usos. This is on the kickoff. The New Day on the kickoff show.
Yeah.
It says here, while it's a travesty, a match and feud of this caliber is on the kickoff show, which it is, it was obviously moved to give them the 20-plus minutes necessary on a jam-packed card. Originally, I expected New Day to retain their titles, but in announcing the competitors beforehand, I think they're tipping the hand here towards the title change. Pick the Uso. That's kind of a weird win. I mean, weird reason. Next guy says, provided they are given the time, this one has all the potential to be a memorable match. Extracurricular side of the ring, increasingly physical in this rivalry. There's no reason to stop this feud anytime. Pick the Usos. How about you, Todd? You know?
I mean, for me, I'm going with the New Day. I mean, the Usos beat the New Day clean on SmackDown. You know how it usually goes. If the challengers get the advantage on a member, you know, of the champions who they're facing, the champions will always end up retaining. So for that fact alone, I feel they gave it away on SmackDown Live already. New Day's retaining those SmackDown Live Tag Championships. This match being moved to the pre-show is a complete travesty considering that they had the best match of the night on Battleground. And this has the makings to be one of the best matches of the entire night again, and it's being relegated to the pre-show. I think that's all wrong. But New Day will retain their SmackDown Live tag titles.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't see the Usos winning. I mean, honestly, the Usos win, what does this do? Leads to them having another match? No,
yeah.
Even though the Usos are doing the work of their careers right now, they had like a career renaissance. The same thing that happened with Matt Hardy when he became broken and had that career renaissance. The same thing happened with the Usos when they turned heel, man. Babyface Usos were so boring and stale. But new heel Usos, man, oh my god, I can't get enough of them. I love them. I love their new theme song. Now the theme song has lyrics. I love the look. You know, Usos, they're right up my alley, man. They're just like, my kind of guys, man. Like, I could chill with some guys like the Usos. That's the type of people who I'm with around anyways. But like, the Usos are like right up my alley, you know? They've been having some of the best matches so far. And honestly, I wouldn't want the rivalry with the New Day to end, but honestly, SmackDown needs some new faces in their tag team division. Needs some new faces in the tag team division. We really do.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
Hopefully they bring in some new people to work with. That way, maybe bring up Sanity. Maybe, I don't know, bring up Heavy Machinery. We need somebody, man. We need more people. We need more stuff to do, man. You know? Where the hell is Rhino and Slater? They've been nowhere to be found. They started jobbing. Primo and Rico, I think one of them is injured. But even before they got injured, they weren't really doing much with them.
No. So,
you know, we and this also happens. These assholes wanted to break up American Alpha and Enzo and Cass. Well, this is what happens. We needed tag teams, and guess what? Now we don't got them. How about you start creating new tag teams? What, are they going to make Ty Dillinger and Sami Zayn a team now? Are they going to be a new deal?
That's the only thing I can pretty much see at this point, honestly.
The perfect underdog? Huh? That's what you're going for.
Could be.
Perfect underdog. What is it? Anyways, moving on. I guess this is the main show here. It's going to be a big show taking on Big Cass. While Enzo Amore hangs above the ring in a shark cage. Says here, here's to hoping we see more of Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson in this one as potential new stablemates for the heel version of Cass. Outside of that, this hasn't been the strongest build. Cass has already proven in multiple weeks that he can handle both the Big Show and his former tag team mate Amore same time. Unless WWE is banking on hometown pop for the New Jersey native and Mori, look for Cass single push to continue. Pick Big Cass wins. Next guy says, why is this match happening? Why is the WWE using the shark cage gimmick for the third time in 9 months? Pick Big Cass wins. Yep. My feelings is the same as that second guy. Why is this match happening?
Yep.
Why is WWE using the shark cage gimmick for the third time? Because it happened in NXT. It happened at the Royal Rumble with Jericho, KO, and Reigns. Now it's happening again. Please stop the shark cage gimmick. Nobody's buying that damn thing. Nobody cares about that damn thing. The match is completely irrelevant. You already know, whoever gets in that damn cage, I'm going to take him upstairs, I'm going to hang him up high, and guess what? They're going to have a key, they're going to have some brass knuckles, they're going to have something on. They can take it, throw it down to their teammate, so they can whack the fucking opponent.
Yeah, And you know, just think about this too. Even the build has been so horrible. Just think of how the build started. This whole build started after Kaz beat up the Big Show, and then he was like, goes to Kurt Angle and bitches like, oh, I don't want Enzo Amore anywhere near me. I don't even want it in the same state. Face the Big Show at SummerSlam. I don't want Enzo anywhere near there. Well, the idiot just got through saying that he doesn't want Enzo in the same state.
You didn't want him in the same city or the same state.
And then,
now he's hanging above the ring. How is that not anywhere near you? He could literally cause some sort of damage by throwing down brass knuckles to the Big Show, KO punching Kaz. See, this is the thing though. The fact that Kaz has gotten the better of Show over these last few weeks, it sort of leads me to believe that Show's going. Because Kaz has beaten him at every angle. Every angle. He beat him, and he beat Enzo at the last pay-per-view. Great Balls of Fire. Right?
Yep, and then he's beaten up Big Show and Enzo at every single turn. And what I was about to say, what made Big Kaz look even worse was Angle didn't even force the issue, you know, saying, well, I'm not gonna, you know, ban Enzo from the building or nothing. You know, Angle didn't force any issue. All Angle said was, well, how about I put Enzo above the ring in a shark cage? And then Kaz is like, yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. It's like, you just got through saying you don't want Enzo in the same fucking state as you, but him locked up in a shark cage is fucking acceptable to you? Please. And, you know, it's just like you said, Kaz, he's beaten Enzo. He's beaten Big Show at every turn.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see WWE. I see Kaz if they're going to build him, even if they can.
Because
I already look at this. This experiment. As you're, you know, Boston didn't help with the crowd response on Monday to Kaz.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is, you know, there's no way that you're going to have Kaz win when he's been beating the shit out of the Big Show time and time again. It's like, how does that make Big Show look then?
Exactly. I don't think that's going to happen, bro. You know?
So,
anyway, so we can move on. I don't want to keep talking about this shit.
I'm with you, though. I'm going with Show, man. They're going to give Big Show a SummerSlam moment. Him and Enzo are going to hug and embrace. And
plus, Big Cass is going to be home because Cass is from Queens. So Cass will probably get a pop, but I don't think you get that much of a pop because nobody actually wants to see Big Cass. So I think Enzo's going to get a major pop. I don't know about Big Cass.
And this is another thing, bro, like we've always talked about time and time again. Hometown people, they lose in their hometown, so that's another strike against Kaz. He will lose.
This is true. Now, moving on, another one of those why is this happening matches with the Bulgarian Rusev. Going one on one with the Viper. Now, this guy writes, why is this match happening? If Orton does not put Rusev over, and after doing the job to Jinder Mahal so often, I'm not sure he's going to. What is the point of this? Rusev could be a legitimate mid-carder for WWE, but they have slogged him down with this awful gimmick and have nothing planned for him. Pick or win. Next guy says, despite the tremendous collective talent in this match, WWE has done a poor job giving us a reason to care about who win or why they were paired together in the first place. That's about the nicest thing that can be said at this point. Pick Rusev wins. Now, I agree with the first guy. Again, why is this happening? Neither guy had anything to do at this neither one of them had anything to do. This match has literally been built for 0 weeks. Rusev came out, beat Gable, he fucking cut a promo. A challenger, Orton comes out. That's it. That was the build. That was the build. Then this week, Rusev beats Gable, puts him in the accolade, wins. As soon as he's about to say something, Orton comes out RKO. And that's it. That's the build. That's the build. No heat, no nothing.
Nothing.
Horrible. Absolutely horrible. Randy wins.
Yeah, I mean, even though this is one of those situations where Rusev really hasn't gotten nothing in on Randy, you know, Randy's had the upper hand. But one thing people gotta remember is Randy is one of those high company guys where it doesn't fucking matter. They'll do what they want with him. He kisses Vince's ass. And Randy Orton just came out of a feud with Jinder Mahal, losing, not being able to regain the title. So you think Vince is going to have Randy Orton lose clean to Rusev? It's just like Vince McMahon's theme song says, no chance in Randy wins. Randy wins RKO out of nowhere. That's it, man.
Yeah.
That's it. One RKO, it's done.
All right, so I'm going to read the next match, then I'm going to go downstairs real quick, get me some water, and then I'll just tell you the match so you can speak about it.
Okay.
All right, so next match is Naomi taking on Natalya. Speak about it, I'll be right back.
All right, brother. Well, Naomi and Natalya for the SmackDown Live Women's Championship. I mean, you know, what is there, you know, what is there really to say about this? You know, Natty just out of the blue gets the women's title shot. You know, she wins a match, you know, becomes number one contender, that Fatal 5-Way or whatever they were talking about at Battleground. Natty wins that, becomes number one contender, face Naomi. Natty's gone on to make Becky Lynch tap out, you know, this past Tuesday on SmackDown Live. And, you know, in the end, Naomi, even though she's been a babyface, I just, she's gotten over. I just kind of feel like there's people out there that are ready for her to lose the championship. Now, I know Natty has never held the women's championship. Natty has only held the Divas Championship when it was the Butterfly Belt. She held that title one time and only for like a month, I think. And that's when she first debuted, you know, years ago. Other than that, she's been without a women's title basically her whole career. I mean, she's at SummerSlam in New York going up against Naomi. I mean, if you really look at this match too, there's been really nothing to this build. I mean, the only thing that has really been important with this build has been Carmella. Every time Carmella shows her presence with the Money in the Bank briefcase, Carmella shines. Carmella is the star of, you know, the whole segments. I think no matter which woman wins the title at SummerSlam, I think Carmella is just waiting in the wings. SmackDown Live Women's Champion. You know, I just see the writing on the wall at this point. And Carmella's going to be, should be cashing it in soon. I don't think they're going to hold off, you know, that long. I think they will have her cash in and become champ. You know, maybe even at SummerSlam, maybe the SmackDown after SummerSlam. I mean, we shall see. But the way this match can go, I mean, I don't know, guys. It's really tough. I mean, if you look at it, it could go either way. Naomi win, and then she goes on to face whoever else. Which I think she's pretty much beaten everybody else on the roster except for Charlotte. Naomi and Charlotte really haven't came in contact with one another as yet. But, you know, when is Charlotte going to be back now? Especially with what's going on with her father. Nature Boy Ric Flair, you know, in the hospital, in critical condition. And my prayers go out to Ric Flair and his entire family. Resting comfortably and doing well. But, yeah, I mean, really, this match can go either way. Naomi can win it. She can move on. Natty can win it. And then Carmella can cash in on Natty. I mean, really, you're to a point where either or could win, but see, if Natty would win the title, go on, you know, and face, you know, the other women in the division. Naomi, I mean, she's had it a while now. She's had it since WrestleMania. And you're going into SummerSlam now. She's had it a good four and a half solid months. So, you gotta take into consideration, even though Natty hasn't really held the title, could this really be her time? Because, you know, Natty is just, she's been waiting. You know, I could see maybe Natty getting one more run with it. It's just, it's hard to make a legitimate pick on this. And, I mean, I know I have to make one at some point or another. I'm going to see what Sage has to say when he comes back. He should be coming back soon. But, this match is definitely the lower one on the totem pole. You know, out of the two women's matches. But I see Sage now coming back here. What's up, bro? I'm just explaining to all of our listeners here my confliction, you know, with how it could be either Natty or Naomi. I mean, Naomi could even move on, but then again, Natty could win and Carmella could cash in on Natty.
Oh, that's exactly my prediction. The winner will be Carmella. Regardless of which one of them wins, Carmella's winning. Because being as how Baron Corbin no longer has his briefcase, somebody gotta cash in.
Yeah.
And on top of all of that, Carmella's from Staten Island. Right over there. Still New York.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I do predict Carmella to win. I really do. And, she's gonna catch. It's just the whole thing. Well, it's like I think too. Eddie and Carmella used to be in the welcoming committee. Could they build a rivalry between them two? But then again, Natty really hasn't done nothing, so I guess, yeah, I do have to go with Naomi beating Natty and then Carmella cashing in on Naomi and being the eventual winner and walking out with that SmackDown Women's title.
And there you go. Definitely gonna be Carmella to walk out with that.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
And with Ellsworth by her side, they're gonna guarantee they don't Baron Corbin. So,
most definitely.
Anyways, moving on. You done with that? You wanna move on? You wanna move on? Time. Yo.
Yep.
You want to move on to the next one?
What was that, bro?
I said, do you want to move on to the next one?
Oh, yes.
Ooh, you good? Where's your headset?
Oh, I didn't put my headsets in tonight since, when I put them in the past couple times, they were breaking up on you.
Oh, but I'm like talking and it's like you can't hear me.
Yeah, you were
great. Make sure your volume's turned up. Make sure your volume's turned up.
I got it.
Alright. Anyways, the next matchup is Baron Corbin taking on John Cena. I'm not even going to read what these people say. I just want to get your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, I think more and more about the cash and really how stupid WWE made both Corbin and John Cena look on Tuesday night. And, Corbin does his damage, lays out Cena. You know, Mahal's laid out after an AA from the middle rope. But then Corbin, it's almost like he forgot he had a fucking briefcase, a Money in the Bank briefcase in his hand. He walks up halfway up the ramp, then he looks down like thinking, oh shit, I got the Money in the Bank briefcase, let's cash that in. Then he runs down, and then, you have John Cena watching all this go on, right? John Cena. And next thing you know, instead of John Cena sitting back and, waiting for Corbin to cash in and hit the end of days on Jinder and become the champion, so that way Cena's match with, Corbin becomes the WWE championship match, what does Cena do? He gets up and punches Corbin one time. Mahal rolls up Corbin, who didn't have a match all night, who was a fresh body. Gets one punch from John Cena, gets rolled up from Mahal and gets beat. Now, who looks stupider, Baron Corbin or John Cena? I ask you that question, Sage. Cena could have been fighting for the WWE Championship right now.
Yeah, but Cena, they both look stupid, but God, you better not.
He's starting to bark on you.
Anyways, I'm gonna tell you this. They both look stupid, but Cena's the veteran. Corbin is the young, hungry wolf. Who wants to take any opportunity to make a name for himself. Cena already has a name for himself. So, that's what I saw. I saw as Corbin, as a young, inexperienced, hungry wolf, trying to prove himself, trying to make a name for himself, and cash in on the champion at the time. Cena, who's been there, done that before, 16 times already. the way he was laying back and laughing at Mahal, almost as if to say, yeah, you thought you could beat him, yeah, you thought you was going to be champion today. Like, you know, that's the way that I saw it. You know?
Yeah.
Like, yo, you ain't nothing. You ain't no big deal. Like, you're the one who's looking stupid. I'm still seeing him. Corbin, you ain't nobody. That's the way that I see it. You understand?
That's right.
So, at the end of the day, Corbin is going to have something to prove now that he's facing John Cena. And I also read rumor stating that this, you know, they realized it was a mistake to put briefcase on Corbin. Corbin clearly wasn't ready to be champion. However, that now, what the storyline is going to be moving forward is that now Corbin is going to be so pissed off, he's going to be so triggered by losing on briefcase that they're going to turn him into a monster of Braun Strowman. He's essentially going to be Braun Strowman's monster among men. He's going to start going. That's what I heard. That's the rumor that I heard today. So, whether that's what they do or not,
I still think in the end, throughout it all, John Cena's going to beat Baron Corbin clean.
Hmm. I mean, they're gonna get ready to be booed. They're gonna get booed out the building by he's gonna get booed out the building by Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Who's your pick to win in this match?
I mean, if the rumors are true and they're going to make Corbin this big badass, it's got to be Corbin. If not, I mean, it's going to be Cena. But honestly, Corbin has more upside to win. And Cena doesn't need to win. Cena beat Rusev last month, and what was a feud that, one, nobody gave a fuck about, and two, Rusev desperately needed the win, and Cena didn't give it to him. This is more or less the same situation. Corbin desperately needs a win, especially over a big name person, being as how he lost to Nakamura last time. And a win over Cena, my God. It's like, holy shit, Baron Corbin beat John Cena. However, you know, being as how it is John Cena, he dictates who he lays down to, essentially. And while he hasn't had a problem putting anyone over before in the past, I can see him not laying down a Corbin. Again, unless the storyline is he's gonna be some sort of fucking monster. So, let's see what happens. Let's see what the storyline is. But my pick, man, I don't know. I'm pretty stuck here. Who do you got? You got Cena?
I'm going with Cena. I think Cena's gonna win, especially, you know, since they were talking about on ESPN about John Cena's SummerSlam losing streak, so it's almost like they're prepping you like John Cena needs a SummerSlam win. It's time for John Cena's SummerSlam win.
But losing streak? Whoa. What's been his losing streak? Since 2014?
I'm trying to think the last SummerSlam he actually won in, bro. I know he lost to 2014.
Yeah. That's what I said. 2014, he lost to Lesnar. That's when
Jake
got his ass whooped for like 5 minutes straight.
For some reason, the last SummerSlam I remember Cena winning is 2007 against Randy Orton.
Well, they can't continue the tradition. Cena can go away for a few months after the loss.
Yeah.
He can come back and pick up right where he left off. Same thing he did with AJ Styles.
That's true, too. They could go that route again if they want to. Mm-hmm. In the end, you know, it's a tough one, especially with the rumors, but I'm still going to go with John Cena.
I mean, even if Cena loses this match, you got to remember the golden rule. Cena always gets his win back.
Styles,
if it would have been Nakamura, it would have been the same deal. It would have been the same deal, no matter who you put. You got to win, but in the end, he's going to win the fucking feud. So, I mean, Caruso beat him the one time because he passed out, because he put Cena in accolades, Cena passed out. After that,
I remember that.
Caruso didn't win no more. Hear me?
Yeah.
Rusev didn't win no more after that time. And then with Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens beat him. Elimination Chamber 2015. Guess what? He didn't win no more after that.
Yeah.
Even if Cena loses, he goes away. Guess what? When he comes back, you're going to get him win back. That's the Cena rule. Anyway, but my pick is Cena. My pick is Cena.
You're picking Cena?
Mm-hmm. And this will most likely be Baron Corbin's best match ever, because he has not had any matches that have wowed me. Every Baron Corbin match is in okay. Or it's been me. Getting up to get a beer. It's never been me investing.
That's true. We'll see how it turns out.
Mm-hmm. Now, hold on. Give me a second.
What happened?
Sorry, I'm trying to pull up the card on my laptop.
Your laptop's not cooperating with you?
I don't know, it is. It's just I did this like split screen thing on it where Hangouts open on my left side, but then I have my browser open on the right side.
Oh.
It's like a split screen view. So I'm able to still see you and myself, and then also have my browser on the opposite side. Okay, so we spoke about Tozawa and Tozawa Neville. Monday Usos, Hardy Boys and Jordan versus Mistras, Natalya Naomi, Rusev Randy, Big Show Cass, Corbin Cena. Let's talk about the Raw Tag Team Championship match with Cesaro taking on two-thirds of the Shield and Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. Who do you have and why?
Well, I gotta tell you, I'm excited for this match. This is one of the matches that I'm looking forward to the most on the entire card. Great build up, you know, with the whole trust issues with Ambrose and Rollins, you know, trying to find that common ground to reunite again, and Sheamus and Cesaro pushing them to their limits to where they finally decide to reunite and go against a common enemy. And I think the build has been great. The whole story to this match has been great. I love it. And I really think in the end, Ambrose and Rollins are going to win. And then this is going to lead in the fall months to an Ambrose heel turn when they finally do lose the tag titles.
100%.
But I think Ambrose and Rollins... What was that, bro?
100% agree.
But Ambrose and Rollins, they're definitely walking out with those Raw tag titles.
Now, the outside of the main event, the Wyatt Balor match, which we'll get into right after this match, this has been the other match, or the other feud and build that I've been looking forward to. I have lost interest in Dean Ambrose for I don't know how many months now, but I don't care about him. And I want to care about him. I want to. I like him. I really do. I saw his work in CZW when he was John Moxley. I've seen some of his work in FCW again as John Moxley. The kid has talent. He's always had time. This man has always had time. The thing about Ambrose is his character can't be taken serious because WWE has made it so that he is not to be taken serious. They took this man who is Ryan Pillman 2.0 in my eyes. Was the second coming of the loose cannon. The second coming being one hair away from having another screw loose. Being that psycho, almost Joker type character in terms of being insane. And they made him into a joke. They made him into somebody who walks around with a fucking hot dog cart and squirts you with ketchup and mustard. One thing I forgot about that, when he was feuding with Randy Orton, I believe, back in 2014 or 2015, he pulled out a hot dog cart and squirted him with
yep.
And
I remember that kid.
And it's like, seriously, dude, like, this is a guy who, when the Shield was together, everybody was like, yo, you gotta keep an eye on him. Everybody was like, yo, this, if anybody turns on the Shield, it's gonna be this guy. He was the guy who everybody saw as the one who was going to turn their backs on the Shield. It ended up being the least likely of them all. I mean, now looking back, he was the most obvious. But back then, he was the least likely. He didn't inspire violence. But he did. Guess what? Ambrose was the only one who was going after him. Reigns was good. He was getting his push. He was doing. He was going to be main eventing regardless. Ambrose wanted revenge. Ambrose wanted blood go violence. He wasn't letting violence sleep. And not nothing in WWE. That was the best feud of 2014. Violence and Ambrose. Was it 2014 or 2015? 2015.
It was 2014 into 2015, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Because I remember their Lumberjack match. Phenomenal. I remember their Money in the Bank match.
Yeah, the Lumberjack was in... The Lumberjack was in 2014. The Hell in a Cell was in 2014. The Money in the Bank, the ladder match for the title, was at Money in the Bank 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So they went like a soft year.
Exactly.
Everybody
saw this being at the best feud of that year, and it was good.
Yeah, and
it was.
They picked it up again in 2016, the draft. You know, when they had the Shield triple threat, and they had Rollins versus Ambrose on Raw, and Rollins versus Ambrose on draft night on SmackDown. You know, they even picked it up again.
And then last year, I forgot what pay-per-view it was.
Where yeah.
Ambrose cashed in on Rollins versus Reigns.
Oh, Money in the Bank. Yeah, he cashed in that Money in the Bank after he won it.
That pop, that reaction. And then you fast forward to Ambrose now. And you think to yourself, yo, what went wrong? What happened? What happened? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. Because I honestly don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to Ambrose.
It's honestly but once they put the... Once they put the IC title on him.
He's not the same Ambrose as back then. He's not the same Ambrose as back then as when he won the title. Or even before he won the title, but leading up to it. And, you know, I feel bad for him. Because I know he's going to be one of those guys where he's going to ask for his release. He's going to be one of those guys who he's going to be shitting on this company when he gets let go from it. Hopefully not how Alberto Del Rio has been doing it. But
yeah,
he'll most likely be on that same boat as a guy like Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler leaves that company, which we know he will. Ambrose will most likely leave that company as well. With them handcuffing him and not letting him be who he wants to be, who he knows he can be. Now, I believe that this is going to be a great match. I think he'll win the title. I think great reaction, they're gonna have a great big pump. And I think everybody's gonna love this. The only thing is, the only question is when will Ambrose turn? Will it be, like you said, in the fall months? Will it be in the beginning of next year? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that's too big of a storyline for you to just have that it's too big of a storyline for you to just have it in the winter months when everybody stops watching the product. It's too big of a storyline. That's the type of storyline that you have and everybody's eyes is on it. Maybe we'll rumble. That's a Royal Rumble match right there. Rollins versus Ambrose. Ambrose the heel this time. And Rollins the face.
That would be good. Rumble match right
there. Have them win the title. Have them hold it all the way until then. That's what I see.
That would make sense. They could even carry it over to a WrestleMania match if they want to.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. But yeah, I'm with you. I see Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins beating Sheamus and Cesaro, especially with the rumors that Sheamus is going to go off to film a movie. So Sheamus and Cesaro definitely got to break up soon. And on top of all of that, I want Cesaro to be a single star. I don't want him to be in no tag team. I want him to be a single star. I want him to get his singles run, singles pushes. I want him to win singles gold. IC, US, Universal, or World. Give him one of those, man. He deserves it.
Yeah.
Absolutely does.
I agree, totally.
Anyways, we're winding down here. And we got Bray Wyatt, the Eater of Worlds, taking on Finn Balor. Now, of course, we all saw this coming a mile away. We saw this shit coming like if you're underwater and you see a shark's fin coming up from the ocean. You've seen it coming. You've seen it. And by you've seen it coming, I'm talking about Finn Balor bringing back the demon for SummerSlam. Now, the last time we saw the demon was actually at last year's SummerSlam. So this is going to be kind of special. Balor's going to bring it back out. It's been almost a year since we've last seen the demon make an appearance on WWE programming. And, you know, whenever he reviews the demon, you know what that means.
He's gonna win.
You get the victory. So that's exactly going to remain true here. So I'm with Finn Balor winning. Now, that's kind of difficult for me because I actually really like both of them. As the viewers of this show know, and as Tino's, I'm a fucking Bray Wyatt fan. So the day I die, I'm bottom of the grave. The day I die, but man, I love Finn. I'm 100% on Virgo's side. Virgo Devitt, Prince Devitt, whatever you want to call him, Finn Balor, I'm 100% on his team. I love the gimmick. I mean, this is the man who created the fucking Bullet Club, the hottest stadium in the entire fucking wrestling business today. So, yeah, man, there's absolutely no way in hell that I'm going to side with Ray winning. It's 100% going to be Finn, especially if he debuts the demon. Now, it'll be interesting to see how Bray will interact with the demon because, see, I pitched this to you a while ago, see, that I wanted the demon to be almost like a separate entity from Finn. I wanted him to think on his own. I wanted him to act on his own. I didn't want him to be Finn with face paint on, which is exactly what it feels like right now. I want this demon to be, you know, its own entity, its own thing. You know? I want the demon to just almost like behave differently. be more vicious, be more, I don't know, like, have a different side to him, you know, like, oh my god, how do I put it, like, have a different moveset, you know, don't use the same moveset that Finn uses, use different moveset, only the demon uses, you know.
Yep.
Like, even his music is a little different, too. Like, whenever the demon comes out, you know, we have, like, the red lighting, and the heart beating, and, you know? That's only the demon. Only the demon has that. But Finn fucking comes out with the jacket, and it's a Polaroid jacket. That's it, you know? Like, there's nothing cool about that. There's nothing unique about that. You know?
You're right.
I don't know. Maybe I'm asking for too much. Maybe I'm looking into it too much, but I absolutely want something different. I want this demon to be something different, you know? That's all. But the reason that I'm saying it is because I want some sort of interaction between Ray and the demon. Maybe Ray can control the demon. Maybe Ray can manipulate Balor into staying as the demon, you know? Almost like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, almost like Bruce Banner and fucking the Incredible Hulk, you know? Like, Balor only uses the demon whenever all hope is lost, like as a last case scenario, as a last resource. Fuck, I couldn't beat you like this. But, you know, I have no other choice but to use the demon. Not because he wants to, but because he has to. That's it. That's the last, his last option to beat someone is to bring that out. And when the demon comes out, he's a totally different entity. He doesn't even respond to Balor, you know, he's the demon, you know, and Ray controls this field. You know? Ray's the Pied Piper. Ray's a man of a thousand names. He even said it himself in his first promo. He's the little girl. I'm a man of a thousand names. I'm the Pied Piper. You know?
Yeah.
And why not have this whole dynamic where Ray can fucking manipulate and control his demon? He can use his demon, man. Sick and all people, you know?
Yeah.
Just sick the fucking demon to attack people and do his bidding. You know? Use it as he sees fit. What do you think
about that? I got you. Well, I'll tell you, as I do my best very wide impersonation, I'm here. You pretty much hit the nail on the head with all the points. You know, because I would make the same points that you did. The only things that I'll add to this is Finn's going to win guaranteed. This is like the surest bet in the world, even though we're big Bray Wyatt fans, we both love Finn too. Gonna win guaranteed. The demon's not gonna lose. Plus, this is Finn Balor coming back to Brooklyn 1 year later to where he won the Universal title, but also suffered the shoulder injury that kept him out for like 6 months, 7 months. Balor's gonna come back to Brooklyn as the demon. and redeem himself. He did a big win over Bray Wyatt and going strong into the fall months. That's what's going to happen. Finn's winning.
Absolutely.
There's
no way now that I see anybody.
No doubt.
Anyway, moving on. What do we have left? Sasha Bliss. Alexa Bliss versus Sasha Banks. Now, this is another tough one for me because I absolutely love both of these women. I mean, it sucks they both have to be on the same brand because they want separate brands. I would have each one of them be the champion of their respective brand. Being as how they both on the same brand, at least we get to see this match. But man, I don't want either one of them to jump. Like, I want them both to be champions. Like, fuck. Why can't they just be co-holders of the championship, like Lay Cool used to be? But, yeah, I think Alexa's time is up. I think she's held that title for far too long. I mean, she's literally held it since the draft. Like, even during the shakeup, I think she still had the title. She didn't even go anywhere during the shakeup, you know?
Exactly. Right? Yep.
So, yeah, I believe that it's her time to give it up, and it's Sasha's time to reign. I mean, too bad that Bayley had to get injured. But honestly, again, I still believe that's a blessing in disguise. Because now we're actually getting the match that we should have gotten from the beginning. But I mean, it's kind of hard because everybody loves Alexa. Everybody loves Sasha. So, I mean, if Sasha wins, where do we go from here? They're going to get a rematch? Then after that, what about it?
Yeah.
What about that?
I mean, honestly, I'm with you. I feel that it's Sasha's time. Of course, I'm pulling for her, even though I love both. I love Sasha more. I mean, look, she's my profile picture, for God's sakes. The only thing is that's making me wonder. I mean, where does Bayley go from here? Because you could do either or. I hope that they turn Sasha heel to turn on Bayley when Bayley comes back. But I'm also thinking, with Bayley being displeased with the booze, what if Bayley comes back as the jealous one and turns on Sasha? I'm hoping that doesn't happen. I'd rather Sasha be the heel.
Even if Sasha does turn heel on Bayley, they're still going to choose Sasha over Bayley.
Oh, yeah.
Bayley needs to go away minimum 5 to 6 months. She can't be back before then. His fans are probably still resent her, still talk shit about her. You know, she needs to go away. People need to start missing her. And the heart really does grow fonder when they don't see you. So, hopefully, whenever she does come back, people are giving of her, people cheer her. You know, we treat her the way she's supposed to. She's a baby face. You know, but again, this isn't the fans' fault. We're not necessarily going with they need to perform booking on Bayley. They made her into such a fucking punk that nobody can take her serious. Now people make fun of her. And NXT, that wasn't the case. Why is it the case now? I'm fucking done with you being awesome. Shouldn't be that. But again, it's the booking for Bayley that people are upset at. Not Bayley himself, but the character of Bayley, not the person who performs under as Bayley. It's her booking.
Yeah, you're right. You're definitely right, bro. I just, we're both picking Sasha. I think she'll walk out with that Raw Women's Championship, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Moving on. I think this next match, I'm calling it right now, already Friday. So already Friday, August 18th, 2 days before SummerSlam, I'm calling it right now. Right now, AJ Styles defending his United States Championship against Kevin Owens and Shane McMahon, special guest referee, calling it right now, it's going to be the match of the night. And no matter who wins, no matter what happens, I believe this match either on the same night or could be scheduled for the following pay-per-view. This match will be turned into a triple threat. Shane McMahon might get inadvertently hit by both men. Whether on purpose or by accident, most likely by accident. Shane might get pissed, grab the mic, tell him to bring out another referee, because he's inserting himself into the match. Insert himself into the match, and it'll become a triple threat. Or, might be a solid match, whether it's back before, and at the end, Kevin Owens loses. Kevin Owens might be so pissed off. He fucking attacks Shane. Takes him to the outside. Fucking powerbomb on the apron. Maybe there's your feud for the next. Regardless of what happens, Shane is going to get involved in some way, shape, or form. But I see AJ winning.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hit the nail right on the head with the points of this, because this could go the one or two ways, like you said. Shane could get involved. It could be a triple threat matchup, or Shane can just count Owen's shoulders down, one or the other. And I totally agree that Shane again will definitely have involvement in some way, shape, or form. And I'm with you. No matter what happens, AJ Styles is walking out with that title. I think the more likely scenario to happen is Shane is just going to count Owens down. you know, maybe Shane will get knocked down. AJ, we'll have AJ. Alright. I think it's gonna go the way of Shane, or Owens having AJ beat. Shane will be knocked down. Next thing you know, Shane won't be able to count. Owens will be pissed. By the time Shane comes to, AJ will get the hit in. And then he'll pin Owens. Shane will come to. And then, you know, Owens will be counted down. And then Owens is going to flip out and destroy Shane after the match. That's what I see. What about you, bro? Do you agree with that? Oh yeah, Sage told me to hold on, that's right. I see happening. I see Owens growing so incensed, you know, so upset. I think he's gonna take destroy him. I'm not gonna be I was just saying the likelihood of the scenario is Shane's gonna get knocked down. Owens will have AJ beat. There'll be no referee. Owens is gonna get frustrated. AJ is gonna hit the phenomenal forearm. Shane will come to. You know, AJ will pin Owens. Retain the U.S. title. Owens is gonna go off on Shane and beat the living crap out of him, and that's gonna lead to Shane and Owens down the line.
Yes, definitely. I mean,
that's what I see.
Whatever happens, I see him getting involved. Some way, shape, or form, he will get involved.
No doubt about it.
Anyways, what do you have to win, though?
What was that?
Who do you have to win?
Yep, Styles is definitely going to win and retain.
Cool. You want to go on to the next match? You want to move on to the next match?
Oh, yes.
The next match we have, Jinder Mahal taking on, Jinder Mahal, the champion, the world heavyweight champion, being accompanied to the ring by the Singh brothers, taking on Shinsuke Nakamura. What do you have? Why?
You know what? One of two things is either going to happen. Either Nakamura is going to win the title, or Baron Corbin's going to come in and ruin the whole thing because he'll still be pissed off about his Money in the Bank loss and cause a disqualification and Jinder retains the title. I'm kind of torn on it. What do you see happening?
I mean, I don't know.
You're torn too?
Yeah, I mean, they could give it to, they could give it to Shinsuke, but again, might be too soon, but then again, there's been people who've gotten felt way slower than he has. I mean, there's been people who've gotten it way sooner. I think Shane has got it in like under 5 or 6 months. And he was on the main roster, you know? So, again, who knows, man? You know? know what you could call it. But regardless of it, Jinder needs to lose that title. That's one thing that I see needs to happen. Jinder needs to lose that title.
Oh, definitely. So do you think they're going to keep it on him a little longer, or do you think this is it?
There's no better time than now. They need to take it off him. Jinder is not going to be well received in Brooklyn. Jinder will get chewed the fuck out. I don't see him doing good at all. I don't.
You're going with Shinsuke?
Here's the thing. Okay. Say Jinder does win, or say Shinsuke does win, he might not win the title. Might be DQ.
Yeah.
Might win by DQ.
I think it's going to be the one of two things, man. Either Shinsuke's going to win by DQ with Baron Corbin's involvement, or Shinsuke's going to walk.
Why would Baron Corbin get involved?
Because he'd be upset about his Money in the Bank loss.
No, why would he get in? They have nothing to do with it. Cena was the one who crossed the lines.
That's true, too. That's very true. I mean, I guess since you put it like that, I'm gonna go with Shinsuke winning and becoming champ, because that's really the only route they could go. It really is. Because what do you do? Keep it on Jinder? I mean,
if Jinder wins, he'll retain, he won't lose the title. That's what I see happening. Shinsuke could win, but it'll be Shinsuke could win, but it'll be DQ. So.
That's
what I see now.
And you know what? I mean, it's a good point, because like you told me earlier, you know, Jinder wouldn't even be. Or no, I was talking about this with my buddy yesterday. You know, the India tour is coming up. If Jinder loses the title, he won't even be champ going into the India tour, which I think that's what they wanted to begin with.
Wow.
So yeah, I could see what you see. I could see Shinsuke win the match, and then the Bollywood boys just jump in, or the Singh brothers just jump in and cause a DQ, and Shinsuke wins, but he doesn't win the title. Jinder keeps it.
Absolutely.
That's what I'll go with.
But anyway, so you got Jinder, or you got Shinsuke?
I'm gonna say Shinsuke winning by DQ and Jinder walking out with the title.
I got some main events meeting for the WWE Universal Championship, the Fatal 4-Way. We got the champion Brock Lesnar defending against Roman Reigns, Samoa Joe, and Braun Strowman. Now, I'm not going to go too in-depth with this. I mean, it's either who you see winning and who you don't see winning. being on this for this match has the stipulation Brock and Heyman gonna go away if Brock loses. And given that, like, you know, the rumors of what supposedly is gonna happen with gender, Lesnar going away to fight in the UFC, and so we know that that's what he wants to do. So we know he's not going to last much longer in WWE. However, the contract finishes after Mania or before Mania, something like that. So, which means this is what gives us the debate that maybe he's not going to leave right away. Maybe he'll be after me. So that's what brings a little bit of dilemma, but if he is going to leave, this is it. Go do his fight then. He's going to drop the title to somebody. I believe he'll drop the title at SummerSlam. And it might just be, I only have one or two people. I don't have brains for it at all, because I think they want to give him that type of meaning. That's always been the end goal. The goal from the beginning for Reigns. You know, they always want him to be the top guy, whether we accept it or not. They want him to be the top guy. So, that leads me to believe that he ain't gonna win it this Sunday. It's either gonna be Joe or Strowman. Now, if you ask me who do I think management is more high on, hands down, Strowman. When you look at the work that Joe has been doing, I mean, Joe essentially carried the entire fucking feud with Lesnar on his own. This man, already, you know, he cut the best promos. He was there every week. He was very strong. He held his own verbally sparring against Heyman. Like, if that dude didn't make him a superstar, then maybe this match will. And maybe putting a strap on him will. Maybe it'll have people take him more serious. That's most likely what'll happen. As you give it to Strowman, which, let's face it, Strowman doesn't have the promo that Joe has. Strowman doesn't have the versatility that Joe has. Strowman can't put on the matches that Joe can. Strowman is just a big, muscular, sweaty guy with been slides. And he's been broken and super strong. That's it. So
your pick is Joe.
It's either Joe or Strong, but I'm putting down the reasons as to why I think it could be Joe or Strong. So,
all right. I mean, honestly, this is the one match I think where our opinions differ, because I think we pretty much picked the same results in every match on this card. there's really... It doesn't even have to do with the rumors that are going around right now, but I'm gonna explain myself. I think Brock Lesnar's going to win. I think he's going to retain. And there's a few reasons behind that, because I really believe in my heart, wholeheartedly, that Vince McMahon is not going to change his mind on the Lesnar-Reigns match, unless Cena somehow goes over to Raw, like I said. But I just don't see Vince changing his mind, because you'd have the two guys that beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania going head-to-head. They want to blow this up at WrestleMania. Which one of those guys is indeed the ultimate one? And this is how Vince is going to want to get Roman over at Mania, and it's going to fail again. It will fail. As far as to who Lesnar beats in this match, I really don't know. It could be any of the guys. According to rumors that I read today, I've heard that Lesnar and Strowman is the expected match for the No Mercy pay-per-view, and I read the write-up saying that Strowman and Lesnar was supposed to be at the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view, but you know, the whole Strowman injury took that storyline right out, and then it picked him back up with Roman when he came back. And, you know, Lesnar was already involved with Joe at that point. And I'm hearing in No Mercy in September, end of September, that it's going to be Lesnar and Strowman for that title. I guess it's what's being talked about or what's being advertised for that pay-per-view. And, you know, if you really think about it, if you really honestly think about it too, Brock Lesnar could still go off and train for UFC, still holding the championship. Because look at the break he had from WrestleMania all the way up to Great Balls of Fire. 2 solid months. We did not see him. And, you know, you could easily keep Brock off the TV, you know, after No Mercy, all the way into Survivor Series. I mean, if you don't want him to appear at Survivor Series, they could hold him off all the way to the Rumble. And he could be training to fight and take 3 months off of WWE, but still hold that title by the way his contract is written up. And, you know, that's something that they could very well do. Now, if Lesnar would end up fighting in the UFC again, that would just make Roman Reigns look even more like a badass, like Vince wants, when Roman would finally take down Lesnar. Because don't forget, Lesnar still has not re-signed another contract with the WWE. Lesnar's contract is up. As soon as WrestleMania 34 ends, Lesnar's contract is up. And I really think Roman Reigns is going to beat Brock Lesnar for that title come WrestleMania. And I really think they're going to keep this title on Brock. They're going to keep this going forward, have him feud with Strowman in September. And then, you know, going forward, well, Brock takes some time away until Rumble comes around. They could already be planting the seeds for Roman to go after Brock. He's going to enter the Royal Rumble, this and that. Meanwhile, Brock will have a quick feud with someone at the Royal Rumble. And, you know, Roman ends up fighting. They set up Roman and Lesnar already. I mean, I just kind of see that writing on the wall. So I really think Lesnar is going to prevail in this matchup. And if for some reason he does not, he's not going to be the one to get beat. But I don't know.
No. He's not getting pinned. No way he's getting pinned. Only two people are getting pinned. And that's either Reigns, which I don't see happening, or Joe, which I can see happening. But again, I don't think Lesnar's keeping that title, man. Listen, I'm going to tell you one thing. I think this is the last time any part-timer is going to hold any championship for a long time in WWE.
Oh, I agree.
The same thing was said when he beat Cena at he won both championships, the WWE Championship and the World Heavyweight Championship, remember? And then they created the new belt that we see now, the network belt. The same thing you said back then. This motherfucker is never around. We have a champion who's never defending the title. We have pay-per-views where he's never around. The title is always missing. It's always gone. We can't afford to have that again now in 2017. It happened back then. Why are we going to have it again now? No. We need that title to be there and present. Otherwise, the title means nothing. The title means nothing. That we never see the champion there. Yet, we fucking go on their fucking... on their social media, and then we see them posting videos of Lesnar defending the title at house shows. Seriously? But not at pay-per-views? That makes no sense. That makes absolutely no sense. And I think this is the last time they're gonna have a part-time of being a champion. Because Brock wants to fight. Dana White wants him to fight. Vince McMahon wants to get some of that Dana White money. He wants to get some of that UFC money. Same thing that they did last year when he fought Mark Hunt. What do you think? This is just going to be a one and done? Nah. They're going to want to face each other several times. They're going to want to fight several times. They're going to want to make money off of each other. They have a semi-working relationship now because Look at the situation that's going on now with the four horsewomen of WWE and the four horsewomen of UFC.
Yeah.
You see what's going on?
Definitely.
So clearly they have a working relationship. And clearly they want to bank off of this. At the end of the day, remember, Tom, this is about money. It doesn't matter what makes sense. What matters is where the money's at, that's where they're going to move. And you're not going to tell me that Vince McMahon is going to pass up a chance for Lesnar to go and make him some money.
No, he definitely won't pass up on that, but Lesnar could still be Universal Champ and go on to fight in UFC even.
But then we're not going to see the Universal Championship until what, Mania? I highly doubt that. He'll drop the title. That way he can sit out the rest of this time, spend his time working his way back into the USDA or whatever, so he can get cleared, because he still isn't cleared yet. He still has 5 or 6 months left on this shit. While he's sitting out, he don't gotta worry about coming back to WWE. So he'll be sitting at home, working out, doing his thing. That way, we'll be able to see our title, we'll have our feud. Brock don't have nothing to worry about with WWE. As long as he's back before Mania, and he's good, he'll be fine. He can miss out Survivor Series, he can miss out the Royal Rumble. But Mania, Lesnar gotta be there. And if Lesnar sits out, you know, he waits out for the thing to finish. For his, the USDA thing. If he waits for that to finish, bro, trust me. By December, by January, he'll have his fight, his UFC fight. And then after that, he can come on back to WWE. And he can come on back to has his Mania match. And after he has his Mania match, guess what? He can either choose to resign, or he could go away.
I definitely see where you're coming from, and it makes perfect sense. I'm not disputing that one bit. The elephant in the room for me is Roman Reigns, and if Lesnar's not holding that title, I don't see Vince really looking at Samoa Joe, you know, versus Reigns as that match, you know, to really give Roman that boost. I think he's really gonna wanna hold on, Brock, to hold on to that belt just simply because of fucking Roman Reigns. He's been so stubborn with everything else, and I think he's gonna be this stubborn again. Cause I don't think he,
I don't think he could let it go, man. I really don't think he could let it go. He wants to do whatever he can do to make Roman Reigns look legitimate in his own mind. And if Brock fights in the UFC before Mania, and he goes on to face Roman for the title at WrestleMania, and Roman beats him clean, Vince will be like, oh yeah, that'll really get Roman over. He'd be, you know, a guy that defeated John Bones Jones or, you know, whatever. Like, Vince would get a fucking full hard on for that. He would want to do that. As stupid as it is, Vince McMahon would want that. I really believe that that's what he would want. Because he's one stubborn son of a bitch. That's the only thing that's making me pick Lesnar is solely the fact of fucking Roman Reigns. I mean, if Vince McMahon is honestly, I hope Brock loses just for the fact that maybe Vince McMahon is finally going to pull back on this Roman Reigns bullshit. Because honestly, I don't see Cena coming to Raw and winning the Universal title, and then Roman facing Cena and beating him. I think Vince is going to want Roman to beat someone that has been, you know, basically unstoppable. I think Vince put this in his own mind, and that's why, you know, not only because of tradition would take retiring, but I think that's another reason why Vince lobbied for Roman to face Taker and beat him, because he's like, oh, Brock beat Taker, now Roman beat Taker, let's put the two men that beat Taker in the ring at WrestleMania, and Roman's gonna prove he's the ultimate one. It's like, this just reeks of Vince all over the place. That's why I just think that Brock's gonna keep this damn title. I think Vince is gonna be that fucking stubborn.
But what makes you think Reigns can't just fucking beat Lesnar right here then at SummerSlam? What's stopping Vince from doing that?
Because it's not one on one. You know, like say if
That doesn't matter. That'll just give him more reason to be like, wait, well, you know what? When it was Lesnar versus Reigns at 31, that was 1-on-1. And as soon as Reigns was getting close to beat Lesnar, guess what? Rollins cashed in. After that, they haven't touched. This time, now it's a fatal four-way. They're facing each other again. As soon as Reigns could get this close to winning, Strowman or Joe might get involved and pin either or one of them. Or as soon as we think Lesnar's going to put away Reigns, you hit him with an F5, Strowman or Joe can come and boom, break it up, hit Lesnar with something, or Strowman with something, or Joe with something. And then that person will get pinned. And neither one of them walks out the champion. And this is all the building blocks for the next match. Then at the next time, whether it be WrestleMania of 34, then they can use this in the video package. Hey, at 31, Reigns is this close to beating Lesnar, but he wasn't able to do it because of this cashing from Rollins. Just this past SummerSlam, Lesnar was this close to beating Reigns, and he wasn't able to do it because Strowman and Joe got involved. Now, it's just them one-on-one. Right? No Money in the Bank, because Money in the Bank was on SmackDown this year, so there's nobody on Raw who can cash in. They don't really have anybody who can even jump in for either man. Reigns is pretty much hated by everybody, so nobody's going to jump in for him. And he's a face, so the Shield won't jump in. And Lesnar, he's a fucking one-man army. So the plate is going to be clean for them. The plate is going to be clean for them, bro. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I can see it. I can see it. But it will be interesting, man. We'll see where it goes. Now, taking all this into consideration, the whole card breakdown, on a scale from 1 to 10, what do you predict this show is going to be?
Solid 8. I don't think it's going to be too great. I don't think it's going to be too bad. It'll most likely be 1 right in the middle, but with the main event and with the main event and with the, what's this shit called? AJ versus KO. The New Day versus Usos. Maybe even Shinsuke versus Omar. Shinsuke ends up being the champ. And who knows what the winner will be. Sasha and Alexa Mac. That's the potential to be a very good match as well. And the Cesaro and Sheamus versus Ambrose and Rollins. That has the potential to be very good as well. Everything else, I don't really care for.
You definitely read my mind to a T. There's no reason for me to repeat it because you read my mind to a T. Those are the must-see matches. Everything else is really just kind of eh. But if those matches are booked correctly and they have story behind them and they have direction coming out of SummerSlam, I could definitely see a solid 8 out of 10 show. I don't see no higher than that, but you know, I could see a solid 8 out of 10. Now, if these matches are booked sloppy, you know, of course, the rating could go lower. But I think they'll book it rather well. At least I hope they will, and we could get a solid 8 out of 10 out of this.
All we can do at this point is hope for a good show.
That's true, man. And we shall see what happens on Sunday night.
So, you
want to
close us up?
Definitely. Just to tell everybody, we got a message in the chat from Lisa, and I love Lisa. She's always like our number one fan. She put always hashtag justice for pretty. I appreciate that, Lisa. Thank you very much for sharing that hashtag. Just to tell everybody, make sure you get that hashtag justice for pretty floating around everywhere on the internet, and that's about it, guys. Hope you enjoy SummerSlam. We did a complete breakdown for you of TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and SummerSlam. We give you a lot of info. Everything you need is right here in this podcast. So this has been episode number 77 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast for Thursday, August 17th, 2017, going into August 18th of Friday, August 18th of 2017, because we started on Thursday the 17th at 11 p.m., and now it's 2:30 a.m., going into another day, and it's a new day. Yes, it is, August 18th, so we spend a whole nother day delivering this coverage for you, and I hope you enjoy it. And, hope you guys enjoy SummerSlam as well. And, we had a great show. We'll definitely be back with you for episode number 78 of the Beyond the Ring with Big T Wrestling Podcast for, the SummerSlam review and results. We'll figure out a day when we can do it, but we're definitely going to review and break down SummerSlam and TakeOver Brooklyn for you in one podcast on episode number 78. So be on the lookout for that. It's going to be a good one. And that's about it, guys. I hope you had fun tuning in with us tonight, listening to us, and thank you very much. SummerSlam weekend is upon us, the second biggest weekend of the year. And, boy, let's hope it's good. Let's hope it's good, and we could come on here and say something positive, and I just pray that, that they don't just totally, you know, bamboozle this and where we're gonna have to come on and rip the show apart. I hope it's gonna be somewhat decent, but, we shall see. You know, we'll tell you like it is, so, look no further than right here on the Beyond the Ring of BT Wrestling podcast, but thank you for listening. We'll be back with the TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and SummerSlam review results for episode number 78. And, enjoy TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and SummerSlam on Saturday and Sunday night, respectively. All of you have a great weekend. Be safe. Enjoy TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and SummerSlam. And, Sage and I will see you for the reviews of both shows coming up very soon. And for Sage, I'm Big T. You guys take care. I love you all. Enjoy TakeOver Brooklyn 3 and SummerSlam. And have a great weekend. Good night, everybody.